show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Hey, and welcome to the regular work week's end. It's Friday. Friday here in the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful, almost level West Virginia. I am Bob. Minute and a half past the hour of 6 o'clock here on the East Coast. 6 p.m. And first things first, my apologies for last night. I don't want to cabbage onto his signature line or anything, but to paraphrase our good friend Mike Malloy, have I told you lately how much I hate Microsoft Vista? Because I do. I really, really, really do. We had some technical difficulties at the beginning of the process last night when Elizabeth Kucinich, one of the most lovely women I have, and compassionate and intelligent women I've ever had the pleasure of meeting outside of Agnes, we had some technical difficulties with her audio feed, first off. The feed from the PA system that somebody didn't have a button pushed, and the button was behind a locked cage. No kidding. So by the time we got done with that, then I started monkeying around with, because Vista has this thing where it likes to reset itself. The sound settings in particular, let's put it this way. What we use here in the studio are XP machines. Because the way that XP handles sound is fairly sane and fairly rational. And you can get around in it. Sorry, answering a quick query. You can get around in XP. The way Vista handles sound, however, all I can figure is that the team that designed Vista's sound aspects inside the control panel were first given, I don't know, a couple of gallons of really bad rot gut 180 proof moonshine and say, here, boys, go drink this with a straw and then get to work on the sound scheme. Because I mean, and I don't, but I'm just getting this off my chest. Vista's approach to doing sound sucks. I mean, really, really sucks. Stinks. It's terrible. It is god awful. It is an abomination. And so last night, no matter what I plugged where or how I, nothing would make Vista take the audio signal that was coming from the mixer into the computer and send it out to the stream. And I think I'm at a point where I'm going to have no choice but to downgrade the laptop to XP. There's a problem with that, though, because hard-headed laptop manufacturers don't want to support XP with drivers. since they've already sunk so much money into, or so much, I don't know what they've sunk, but, you know, everything's got Vista loaded on it now. So that's what happened last night. Just to let you know, we had a lovely conversation with Elizabeth Kucinich, and she is every bit the exceptional human being that I had thought she is and was. And she will be on the program at some point. And we will have a long conversation. She spent a lot of time talking about monetary policy and peace via the issues of peace that, that circle around how we treat money and whether we want to be a nation that is based on wealth, so to speak, the owning of values, valuables, or whether we want to be a nation based upon owning debt. And I think the answer should be obvious. But I also told her a little bit about mountaintop removal. Made sure and invited her and her husband, the most brilliant man in the House of Representatives, to come back to West Virginia sometime and go and just partake of the view on Cayford Mountain out of Hell's Gate and watch what corporate America and American citizens who don't think anything about this region are willing to do to us for corporate profit. And I have a feeling that at some point, although their schedule is incredibly busy, I have a feeling that they will. And it would be my honor to show it to them. So that's, last night was a mixed bag of a very pleasant meeting with very unpleasant technical nightmares. I mean, I was kicked the furniture frustrated. But we'll sort it out. We're good at that kind of thing. And another thing, I hate to ask favors of you guys, but I do have a favor to ask of you. For those of you who are friended with me on Facebook, you can just look up Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, if you want to friend up. And if you're not, if you're already friended up with me, if you'll go and look at my latest status update, and I think it went over to Twitter as well. I have mentioned to you that it is our hope here at the Horn to attend Netroots Nation in August. And because we don't have some monumental corporate budget, we can't just say, you know, pack up the bags, we're going. So as a function of the way we have to do things, sort of with our hat in our hand, I have applied for a scholarship, so to speak, that is sponsored by Democracy for America, a good organization. They're sponsoring several scholarships to cover some costs for people attending Netroots Nation. I have applied for one of those scholarships. The first round of voting on, and see, that's the thing. It's not, it's based on people voting for you and stuff. And the first round of voting, and there are a couple more rounds, but the first round of voting ends on, I believe, May the 10th, which, if you're listening live, is 2 days from now. And if you're listening in, well, Sunday, May the 10th, it would please me mightily, and it would be a big help if you would go to Facebook and go to that link that I posted in my status update that goes to democracyforamerica.com/netroots_nation_scholarships. And then just look for me, Bob Kincaid, and vote for me. Ooh, this just feels kind of slippery, but please, I have a hard time asking for this kind of stuff. I had to write a bunch about, you know, where I see myself in 5 years and, you know, what the, what color, what kind of shoelaces I prefer and why I'm, you know, why I'm liberal, why I'm an activist, what motivates me, you know, who my favorite Beatle was. If you're not a Facebooker, you can also go to headonradionetwork.com. Headonradionetwork.com. Where there's a post at the top of the Horn homepage right now that says, send Bob Kincaid to Netroots Nation. Click on that, and it'll send you. You can follow that link to my page there where you can vote in favor of me. There's ten yes votes right now. Sure would be nice to see a bunch more, and that's entirely up to you. But it would be a big help in defraying the costs. Because you know what? I think this was, you know, this isn't just, you know, Bob's monumental ego, which isn't that monumental. This isn't Bob's monumental ego at work. I sincerely believe, because, and believe is the correct word here. I believe that for reasons of sustainability, and for reasons of strategy, we should make the proceedings at liberal, political, environmental type events, we should make them available to the world. Because when we do that, we cut out some of the distance between us. We eliminate the isolation that the other side has done so much for so long to foster. Well, looky there. There ain't no liberals in Alabama. It's all bright, bloody red, and it's all conservative. And we know that's a lie. There ain't no liberals in Utah or Idaho. Only good, God-fearing, upstanding mom and apple pie torturing conservatives live there. Hallelujah. We know that's a lie. I know for a fact it's a lie because we've got listeners in Idaho and Alabama and Utah. And when we make things like Netroots Nation or other liberal events that folks can't otherwise travel to, when we make that available to liberals all over the country, we put big blinking neon lights around the right-wing lie. And it is one of my goals to expand this operation, which includes finding an operating system that is cooperative with sound, as mentioned at the beginning of the program. It's my goal to expand this operation so that we can go and let American liberals speak for themselves to other American liberals and decent people around the world. We can do that. Nobody else is. There is a vacuum there right now. And if we want to talk about being sustainable, and if we want to talk about being green, and if we want to talk about reducing the carbon footprint, then making these events visually and auditorily available at a distance at vastly reduced carbon emissions seems almost a no-brainer. It's a got to. So that's why I want to be there in August. And I want to thank the folks that have already chimed in and voted. And we need a whole bunch more. We need to make this easy. So they go, oh, look at that. He's got all that many. Oh, he's got to go. And I can't do that. Only you can. So there on my Facebook page is the link to my page. and also at headonradionetwork.com. Send Bob to Netroots Nation. Send this kid to camp. And you can, at no cost to yourself, a little advance warning. It doesn't cost anything to vote, but you do have to register with Democracy for America. And frankly, that's not a bad thing. They're a decent organization. So I hope you'll help out that way. I sincerely do. Now, as for tonight, well, you know, it's Friday. And Friday means spring in the mountains, and Friday means the front porch. Knock the mud off your boots. Come on up on the stoop. Grab yourself a rocking chair. Sit down for some conversation. Over there in that crockery jug with the corn cob stopper. That's some of the finest. Get yourself a swig if you want to. There's sweet cider as well. So, where do you want to go with tonight's conversation? Hey, you know, I don't like to do celebrity news, but there's some celebrity news out there. It would appear that Kiefer Sutherland is allegedly having a little bit of trouble separating reality from the fiction that he hustles for Fox. Yeah, he had a little reality problem. And, you know, ordinarily I wouldn't touch something like this. Except for the fact that Kiefer Sutherland has made a fortune off of fictionally justifying torture in this country. Well, it turns out that Kiefer Sutherland, or Jack Bauer, I'm not sure who he thought he was at the moment, was in a nightclub in Manhattan in the last few days. Not exactly sure when. But he headbutted a fashion designer. Left a cut on the fashion designer's face. Allegedly. And has been charged with assault. Now, I don't know anything about New York law, but how headbutting somebody is an assault and not a battery, I don't know. Because up there at Harvard on the Mon, they always taught me that assault was putting someone in fear of receiving an insulting or a touching of an insulting or provoking nature. Once you've received the touching of an insulting or provoking nature, it becomes battery. But the New York authorities were content to simply charge him with assault. The question is, and here's the interesting thing, this little paragraph from the Associated Press, it's unclear whether the charges will affect his probation status for a drunken driving conviction in Los Angeles that sent him to jail for 48 days last year. I guess it is unclear. If, however, you were some dude who wasn't the man who plays Jack Bauer, that paragraph would not appear. It would not be unclear whether the charges would affect one's probation, because one's butt would already be in the local pokey. But this is, after all, Kiefer Sutherland, who's taught America how to stand up again against the terrorists. And thus it's unclear whether it'll affect his probation for DUI because he was in a nightclub in Manhattan headbutting a fashion designer. What? Why do you headbutt a fashion designer? Why do you headbutt anybody? I mean, is that one of those macho Jack Bauer things where you're all loaded up on Mexican gasoline, cheap tequila, and you grab somebody by the ears and whomp your forehead into them and say, I love you, man! Is that that? I don't know. But your thoughts are more than welcome. But if you're on probation, isn't a condition of probation, and isn't this almost universal, that a condition of probation, the probation document says something along the lines of, and the probationer agrees that he shall not possess or consume beverages of an alcoholic content, be it beer, wine, cooking sherry, vanilla extract, hard liquor, liqueurs, aperitifs, champagne, wine, mead, or any. Isn't that language almost always in a probation document? And if you want to stay and finish your probation and not wind up having it revoked and getting back in the pokey, doesn't common sense just say that you don't put yourself in those situations? I'm just asking. So there's that to start with. And that's just, lighthearted Friday night kind of things. There's some deadly serious stuff out there, too. There's a question that needs answering. That question is very simple. What did Nancy Pelosi know? And when did she know it? See, I'm not one of these people that will defend my party at any cost. It's not party above all. Ethics matter. Morality matters. Not being an accessory to torture and murder matters. And apparently, Nancy Pelosi, according to documents released by the intelligence community yesterday, Nancy Pelosi was briefed in 2002 about what the Washington Post calls the use of harsh interrogation tactics against al-Qaeda suspects. The release comes, of course, after she has repeatedly claimed that she was never told that the torture methods were actually being put to use. So I don't think it is at all unfair to ask, what did Nancy Pelosi know and when did she know it? And if she knew, she should, at the very minimum, step down from her position as Speaker of the House, period. I'll say it now. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so I went over there and voted for you.
Oh, bless your heart.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully that number can jump up so it can jump out.
Yeah, it would be nice to see it. And I got a big hell yes on that. That's cool. Thanks, Sandra.
Yeah, no, I didn't know they had those. That sort of funding. But how many? Do you know how many they offer or what?
I did at one point, but I think it's at least 10 or 15 or so. So.
Oh, okay. Well. And they use the voting as one criteria, I hope. That's
yes.
The whole.
Yeah, it's not exclusively that.
Oh, okay, but that sort of helps. Well, y'all people out there, it's not that difficult. If you're not registered, just register and then vote.
Yeah, this is me asking for something that doesn't cost anything.
Yeah, well, it took me about a second to sort that out, and I don't, hopefully other people will, it'll go up before your show's over,
Yeah, and well, see, I only found out about it. I got an email reminding me yesterday that the first round of voting is closing on May the 10th, and because I wasn't on the air last night because Bill Gates can't sell an operating system that handles sound, I didn't get to mention it on the show last night. So that only gives me tonight to sort of beat home the topic.
Yeah, well, that's what happens with monopolies. They can present not a consumer ready. Product,
Well, yeah, it's like that old gag. How many Microsoft engineers does it take to change a light bulb?
Yeah, how many?
None. Bill Gates just declares darkness the industry standard.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't even want to start with, that Vista. I don't, that ain't nowhere near my computer. You know, I can't handle it.
Well, sadly, there was no getting away from it on the laptops because it comes loaded with the darn thing, and the companies don't provide, didn't provide drivers in case you wanted to retrofit XP.
Yeah, no, it's just that the laptop I had, you know, it's old enough where I just had the XP on it. So when this Vista came, you know, it just kept on going. Because I'm not putting that nowhere near, because my roommate has it, and it's just an ordeal. I'm like, yikes on it.
Yeah, well, and if you just go, if people want to see the difference, you can go on XP, you can go to Control Panel Sound, and then it just, there's an interface that makes sense.
Yeah, no, the interface on XP is you know, it's doable.
And then if you go to Control Panel Sound on Vista,
yeah,
it's like you just dropped acid.
Well, no, the whole thing is like that. The way it moves, it really, I don't know. I hope they come up with something.
Well, you know, the beta is out of Windows 7, and this may be the shortest release period ever for a Windows operating system. They've been in such a mad rush to get something out there that people won't hate as much as they do Vista.
Yeah, no, everybody I know seems to have some issues with that. I mean, XP, when it first came out, yeah, you had the usual. But that eventually stabilized, and you know, I find it quite usable.
Yeah, I don't have any problems with it. It works well for me. I've seen some positive responses on Windows 7. And you know, you can tell they were in a hurry to get it out. They named it Windows 7. They didn't name it
Vista whatever.
Yeah, or Microsoft Cashew. Because they didn't come up with a catchy, cool marketing name. It's just 7.
Yeah, well, no, it's whatever. I just want something. I mean, I hope that it's a bit easier, because that Vista is so convoluted. It's just a bit of a mess.
It's a bunch of a mess. And
oh, God. Hey, so, Pelosi, yeah, I think I had this conversation with you a while ago about her and the reason why, you know, they weren't moving on the Bush administration. And, you know, I think we speculated that these people are collaborating, and it's all coming true, isn't it? They are. They did.
Yeah.
But it's no wonder we didn't have impeachment. You can't impeach somebody when your ass is in the swing, too, can you?
Right, and I'm sure that memo went around. Dear Madam Pelosi, don't even think about it. We've got the naked pictures.
Yeah, if they're listening to that creepy Harmon woman, well, they listen to everybody. And just like people thought, their spying, yeah, was used for their political enemies. I mean, it's just such a, I don't know, I think this revelation is really disturbing. And like you said, she needs to step on down. I don't believe
that. But, you know, there's a question. This revelation, as you put it, Sandra, you and I have been talking, we've all been talking about this for a while. How much of a revelation is this really? Maybe it's a revelation for the people, you know, who know which shrimp fork to use at breakfast inside the Beltway. It's not a revelation to you and me out here in beans and cornbread land, is it?
Well, that's what I'm saying. And the thing is, and the reason why it's not a revelation is no big insight on our part. It's just common sense. Because then people was committing crimes off the hook, and it's like, why aren't they doing anything? Oh, maybe they have something to do with it too, right? Sixth grader type of deductions. Come on, man.
Yeah.
You know, give me a break. But now this shit is seeping out, and what, we're supposed to move along or move forward or whatever the hell Obama says every 5 minutes?
Oh, yeah. Look, yeah, we're supposed to look forward and not backwards. But
well,
you know what? If she's sitting there in the speaker's chair in the 2010 election, that could screw up a whole lot of everything.
Well, the thing that I can see it doing is people sitting on their hands. I think that's one of the immediate problems that they may face is, you know, us progressives not participating. I'm sorry to say that, but that's how people respond in the U.S. They don't really do too much. But they won't vote, you know.
Yeah, right. They'll vote with their ennui,
right.
I guess.
Yeah.
But let's add one more caveat to this little this little notion we've got going here, Sandra. It's not enough for Nancy Pelosi to step down if it turns out that she was in the know on this and that she tacitly approved. We have to know everyone who was briefed. Everybody who knew in 2002 that the Bush administration was putting people on a waterboard every 4 hours for a month at a time. Everybody who knew that is de facto disqualified to be part of the Democratic congressional leadership.
Well, no, but I mean, I just think that, you know, we're going to have to conclude that there really is this sort of blatant two-tier justice system for the elites. And we need to start using the elites more. I think that it's a term that's kind of European, it's over there, not here, you know. But it's here, and it's big time. And I think that, like you coined the sort of for-profit media, I think the elites need to come into play for our dialogue.
Yeah, those are the people that I've been referring to, I guess, with my tongue planted firmly in my cheek as our betters.
Well, yeah. Well, the thing, it's just because this is so problematic. It's like, okay, these people are in charge, and they're not accountable to anybody, and they're locking up protesters, you know, who protest in England for breaking a bank window. This one poor child is facing years.
Yes.
Okay, see, that's a problem, because the other people who committed this horrible economic treason is just going on their merry way and being rewarded. So you get enough of that. I just think it's a huge problem for democracy. Initially, it's just cynicism and apathy, but it can turn into something else.
In a hurry.
And I'm not advocating that, because I think that we'd be the worst off of that, because this is a police state. They got shit pretty much. I think Americans would be in for a rude awakening, you know?
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the argument that I've made on so many occasions about the right wing people, the right wingers who masturbate over their guns. Well, I gotta have me a bunch of guns in case the government comes for my guns.
Mm.
You know, sucker, if the government comes for your guns, they're bringing a tank.
Right, and you know, things to melt your ass. You don't even know what the hell they got. You know what
I'm saying? Yeah, and you know what? Your little bolt action Browning deer rifle ain't gonna hold off the forces of the government.
Right, you know, I mean, you know, so it's sort of, because there's not been a grassroots sort of long-term organizing strategy, it'll just be some projectile vomit type situation from Americans who are distressed, and then they'll be shot down figuratively and literally, because I don't think, you know, we don't know what they got for us.
No. What are those things called? Active denial weapons. Isn't that the Orwellian phrase that the Pentagon, active denial weapons, that microwave toast your innards machine they've got?
Yeah, they got that, and they got stuff that makes you feel like you're on fire. All sorts of massive crowd control things that they've been using, by the way, in their various wars, like in Afghanistan and in Iraq. They've tried these things out on the poor public there.
Yeah, I'll never forget that statement by, what was it, an Air Force general or something, who said, well, you know, we really can't take this microwave weapon to Iraq until we've tried it out on our own people. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Me too.
You know, so, I don't know. But with Pelosi, though, I mean, I agree with you. I think that, you know, she has to step down. But the media, of course, I just sort of caught a clip of that. Where did you find out about it? Where is it?
Well, it's being covered at Think Progress. The story itself that I've got is by Paul Kane from the Washington Post.
The Washington Post. Okay, so it's in the Washington Post. Hmm.
Yeah, she was briefed on September the 4th, 2002. She and Porter Goss. Remember Porter Goss?
Yeah.
They were the
yeah.
first two to be briefed on the tactics.
And then Dusty Fargo, that guy, ain't he in jail?
Yeah, that's, yeah.
Yeah, he was second in charge during that time. No, them people, they're disgusting. Straight up horrible people. And, you know, I've always, you know, Nancy Pelosi, she always struck me as, you know, a bit too volatile and weird for that top position anyway.
Well, and I'm just, you know, this is one of those bright lines I want drawn in the sand. If you were told about this and you didn't do anything about it, you're done. You know, if you can get your constituents to reelect you, that's fine. But you don't have a we cannot go into the 2010 election cycle. And I hate to seem so politically cynical about this, but we're already in the 2010 election cycle, whether we realize it or not. Okay, because Republicans and conservatives and corporatists and all religion industry monsters, all those freaks, they don't take off years, Sandra.
Oh, yeah, no. Only us poor, pathetic voters who can only exercise our whatever we got left, you know, during these elections, you know. All the rest of them people, like lobbyists, I call them full-time citizens, okay?
Yeah, we're kind of busy.
Yeah, so, but you have to remember, from the top, if we're being told that these people tortured, but we're not going to do anything about it, you know, courtesy of Obama. And I'm just like, once again, we're being told all the time that torture is illegal. Isn't that the law? Or,
well, I remember Condoleezza Rice and torture boy Gonzalez and dim dear former leader himself. The United States does not torture.
Right, but see, these four elites are warring up against a wall of double standards. You got Condoleezza Rice being questioned by fourth graders now. Normal people are like, excuse me, this is illegal. Any American can make that connection that you break a law, usually there's a consequence. Now, these people are going to do what? To try to convince us that that's not the case? It ain't going to work. This is why it keeps coming up, because it's against the law. And, you know, even consumer-driven Americans are sort of like, well, hold up, you know, something has to be done. I think there's quite a buildup of people saying, you know, you can't have tortures and people get away with it. You know, I don't think we're the only ones. I think they're hearing it. I think they're hearing it from the constituents.
Well, and see, you know, when I read this news story earlier today, Sandra, about Nancy Pelosi, I was reminded of my senator, Jay Rockefeller.
Please.
And that, I know, but we got to go over it. You remember the whole cloak and dagger story?
Yeah, no, he got
briefed on domestic spying. It wasn't torture. This was domestic spying.
Oh, and he wrote a letter that was sealed and all this sort of BS. Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. See, that's not acceptable. And I as a voter, and you as a voter, the listening audience of the Horn, as voters, have the right to declare that that's not acceptable.
Oh, no, it's just outrageous. No, it's beyond not acceptable. The whole thing is just an outrage. And the longer the Democrats are doing what they're doing now, the more in cahoots that they are.
Right, and that's why I say we can't go into this this election cycle with this going on. We have to show the American people that we are willing to deal with illegalities, and that there's no partisan cover. There's no, if you are an accessory, this is very simple. If you are an accessory to torture in the United States of America, there is nowhere you can hide.
Well, and if we can start from the point of torture and use it to examine all this mess, because if these people, Obama and all these other people, are okay with this torture stuff, well, damn Skippy, they're going to be siding with these banks and passing legislation to squeeze us more. You know, so I just think you just look at the whole source. And I'm not divorcing Obama from this anymore.
Nope.
As long as he keeps talking about looking forward. No, dude, we need something done about this, you know?
Yeah, we do.
Or he's going to be tied to it. I mean, you know, he's a smart man. Are you kidding me? He can't make that connection. What do they think they're going to be able to just slide on through with this after enough time? Is that what they're hoping?
Well, they're counting on They're counting on the American people not to give a damn.
Yeah, you know, it's hard. I think the problem with that is if the economy, I hate to be cynical, but if the economy was humming along, you know, jobs here, whatever, but I think people would be like, school of America's blah, blah, blah. But no, we're being slammed economic-wise. It just all sort of flows together.
And see, I think their calculus is actually, and I think it's skewed. I agree with you, Sandra. I think that there are those probably in the administration who say, you know, just leave this alone. People's lives are miserable enough, and they won't pay attention because they're busy worrying about whether they get to keep living in a house.
No, I think that it could play opposite. I think people can lump it all together and say, oh, you know what? All of this is unacceptable, and the torture is just icing on the cake, you know? I think the calculation is wrong. I think if it was the other way, people would be more inclined to just not pay attention. I don't know, maybe I'm wrong. I just don't, because,
well, no, I think you're right. I think and I agree with you. And I think that was precisely the calculus that was put to use during the 8 tortured years of the Bush administration. That is that people, people were running along and just running up their credit card rates and having a high old time buying crap at Walmart and got the big screen TV and the American General Hummer penis extender we don't care. We don't care if we're running an illegal war in Iraq. We don't care if we're, spying on each other.
Right.
God, no, because we're all happy little consumers.
Right. And, you know, it's all coming to a complete halt. And it's just like, you know, sort of snakes coming out of a basket. I mean, it's that kind of imagery. I don't know. And it's interesting that it keeps, new things keep coming out almost daily, you know? That's what I find.
Yeah, and who was it? Trafficant from Ohio. Who used that drip, drip, drip analogy on Bill Clinton. The irony of that in regard to something like waterboarding is not lost on me. And the frankly, for pure political expediency, I'm very serious about this. If we desire to consolidate political power in this country, which I guess happens under the Democratic Party, then we can't have drip, drip, drip torture allegations. This isn't some illicit oral sex moment with an intern. This is bloody well serious stuff that goes all the way to the soul of the nation.
Well, and also, who would not be disturbed by this 200 times or whatever this poor fool was waterboarded? I'm like, the gratuitousness of it is just, it's sickening, Bob. I was just sort of like...
Yeah, they only stopped when they got what they needed. Thank God they waterboarded him that 83rd time.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's just something really disturbing about it. And I don't know. I'm not really falling for this, oh, Obama has some other trick. He's, you know, this whole thing where they try to say that, oh, no, he has a master plan. You know how they keep people who support him or keep coming up with some
what I have called from time to time the Obama mind trick, you know.
Whatever, yeah, that that seems to be, and people are getting a bit more hysterical with that line now that it's going the way it's going, and I'm not going to write it off. I don't want to be like that, but the torture thing, the rule of law issue is a problem. It's like, you know what, if you can't enforce our laws, well, there's really, you know, you're not going to enforce contracts. You're not going to get my student loan payment. You know what I'm saying? Screw you.
Yeah, and this in from one of your fellow Sacramentites. Marty says, per Sandra's call, and now we know why we're hearing about Manny Ramirez now and Barry Bonds a few years back and Paris Hilton and Lindsay Lohan and any number of other celebrity scandals. Because it's, I take it what he means is that there is a, there's an open desire to try to divert the national attention. You know, even this stupid, what's her name, Prejean, Miss California.
You mean because, listen, but that stuff is hella funny. I'm like, you know what? It's just so typical. It's like a caricature at this point. Remember Vanessa Williams, you know? Please.
Yeah, Vanessa, she kind of got crucified, didn't she?
Oh, no, but what I'm saying is that your ass don't get there without put out in some regard in the past. I don't care what, you know, this chick, it was just predictable. I was laughing.
I love this shit. Well, there's only one picture, and then the second picture comes out.
And then some more, and her whole pornography is going to be up soon. You know, with the whole whatever she was doing. Come on.
Yeah, coming to a sticky-seated theater near you.
No, it that is just perfect and just hella funny. And the Manny thing is hilarious. And I know Boston is like, Manny who?
Boston's loving it.
Oh, this shit is funny. Listen, I like Manny. I thought, oh, well. But when I heard that, I thought, well, whatever. You know, I'm not surprised.
Well, see, you know where I went the first time when I heard about it? Our buddy David in Tennessee shot me a note about it, and I wrote back and said, look, you know, if he's out there honking on the big spleef, I don't give a damn.
Well,
but nice. No, he's juicing with the fun stuff that makes you talk fast and snort like a horse.
And not only that, but yeah, hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, if his shit is shrinking, I guess you gotta do something about it.
Yeah, this ain't no George Costanza in the cold Atlantic waves. It's shrinkage.
You know, so the thing is, it's just a joke. It's like, you know, baseball. Call it a day. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's why. Well, you know, we've got an enjoyable team to watch down in Charleston. It's single A ball. It's like one step above Legion ball, and that's fun to watch.
Yeah, we got the River Cats here. It's great. They got a little new little park. You can sit there. You know, pay $5 for some grass. Sit in the grass area. You know, hope you don't get hit with a ball. But it's fun. It's a couple of hours afternoon games. Cheap, cheerful, and that's just fine. You know, the rest of it is just like a big time wrestling now.
Yeah, it is, and I that's a shame for it because I love my three are college football, baseball, and college hoops.
Mm-hmm.
And this business, and here we are talking about it. But I know everybody's millionaires in the game, and I know that. I mean, you can go all the way back and read Oliver Wendell Holmes Jr.'s Supreme Court comments on antitrust. We've been having this conversation in this nation for 80 years. And it's a fun game. I like baseball because it's not set to the rigors of a clock. It is a more pastoral game from a more pastoral time. And you just want to sit and enjoy it.
Well, I mean, the steroid thing... It's so disingenuous because they weren't saying nothing when it was putting butts in the seats. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, no. It was all quiet then. And the thing is, this is easily enough remedied. I don't care how much juice you got going into a butt cheek. If they raise the mound 6 inches, it don't matter. But then they're afraid that the balls will stop popping out of the park, and that's what the not serious baseball fans go to see happen.
Well, that launching pad, that's the new Yankee Stadium, is taking care of that problem. Good night. Have you seen the number of home runs out of that place?
Oh, I know. Well, you know, that's like back in the day, Atlanta's Fulton County Stadium used to be called the launching pad.
Well, that stadium, that Yankee one, is crazy.
And I mean. Atlanta Fulton County contributed significantly to, I think, to Hank Aaron's ability to best Babe Ruth.
Oh, right, okay.
And see, that's what's, I mean, and again, the Yankee Stadium design, and you're right, I've read a little bit about that. They built it the way they did because they want balls popping out of the park, and George Steinbrenner and the Steinbrenner family had it in their heads that they could buy more people who could do that than anybody who would come in there and play.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're running some real Gestapo policies at that stadium. Did you hear about they had that rain delay and people left? People paid $800 a ticket. They had the nerve to not let these people back in because you left.
What happened to the rain check?
oh, listen, no, I was like thinking, what's going on? And then they won't let people get up during a certain point of the game, I guess when they sing, I forget what song, in the seventh inning.
They
wouldn't let people go to the restroom. Well, I mean, it's like, you people, when you charge people a lot of money, you got to give them something too, don't you?
Well, theoretically, yeah, but then again, look down to the sunny Dallas, Texas, and their new football stadium. It's got a state-of-the-art prison built in it.
I wish I was kidding. Serious?
Yeah, it's got a state-of-the-art criminal holding facility for unruly fans.
Okay, well, see, that's like, no. Well, oh God, that's crazy. I didn't know that.
Yeah, and then, because. You have Friday night, you have cheap beer Sunday, or Lone Star Day at Cowboys Stadium or whatever, and you look, quarter beer day, and then you expect people, please remain calm in your seats. You know, for a team that hasn't made the playoffs since hasn't won a playoff game since 1996 or some such. You know, them Dallas people serious about their Cowboys and, you know, going to get a little cranky. So that's why they built a prison inside the stadium.
Wow. No, see, I didn't really know that. I'm thinking, as much as they're charging, these people can act any way they want. You ever been to an Oakland Raiders game? Damn, you got to have armor on to go to that mug.
Yeah, those guys with the medieval barbarian armor on aren't kidding.
Oh, no, they will attack folks. Listen, it's not for the faint of heart, those Oakland games. But the prison inside of the stadium, that is so Roman-like. I am tripping. Really?
Yeah, and then, I don't know, maybe be like Texas A&M and bring them out for special teams. It can't hurt the Cowboys' chances.
Oh, the Cowboys, yeah, that's a case of too many chefs. They don't know. I don't know what the hell they're doing.
Well, it was when Bill Parcells can't build a winner somewhere, you know you got a problem.
Oh snap! The fish. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, the big tuna.
Oh God!
You know when Bill Parcells walks away and goes, "Oh screw this."
Yeah. Well, look what he did. Well, you know, here we are on the sports, but look what he did with the Dolphins in one season. Jeez.
Yeah.
You know.
And
he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, and goes to Dallas and, you know, well, look, you know, Jerry Jones should just name himself coach and have done with it.
Oh, yeah, no, that.
I don't think the league will let him, and that's probably the problem.
No, but that guy he has coaching now is a bit soft, ain't he?
I'm not sure where there is, but Marty says beer there is still $10. Oh, okay,
oh,
yeah, and Cal, yeah.
That's a bargain, ain't it? No, I don't. The only other thing I want to say about football is like Carol Owens. Good luck the Bills with that cancer. Have fun with that.
But see, that's the thing. Now that he's gone from Dallas,
yeah,
they'll win.
Yeah, well, I shouldn't expose myself as a football freak. Their schedule is hella light coming up too. If they don't win this season, they're really bad, Dallas.
See, my attitude toward the NFL changed a long time ago when I was at CNN, and we had a sports guy who was he should have been the fact-checking department or the minute information department, and probably was, because that was back when, like, Dan Patrick and so forth were there. And he had the NFL press guide that came out. I don't know if they still do it, because I haven't seen one in a long time. But in the NFL press guide that came out for the year, it actually printed the formula by which an NFL schedule is compiled.
Oh, yeah?
And if you're smart, and you allow for the occasional blind hog finding an acorn, so to speak, you can look at that formula and look at the schedule and probably outdo the bookmakers.
Yeah.
Because the Steelers, if that formula is still in existence, and I don't know, if the Steelers will have the most brutal schedule in all of the NFL next year. The second most brutal schedule will be held by the Arizona Cardinals.
Okay.
And teams like the Cowboys will have will face the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man three times in the season. Whoever happens to be.
It's definitely. I mean, this one coming up is really weak. I think to the NFL, the one thing you can say about them is that they don't mess around. They are a savvy business model. They just want to get paid.
Oh yeah, all that goes back to Pete Rozelle.
Okay, because they're so if they have Dallas in a position of winning, that's more ratings for them. Blah blah blah.
But no matter what they do, they can't do that for the Jets. And it because that's who they want New York, Boston, Miami, maybe Dallas, Chicago, from the TV money end of it, that's who they want winning.
Well, the Jets was doing pretty well until Brett Favre's arm, whatever happens to it, midway. And then he just started.
Oh, Jesus, my arm turned to rubber again.
And now that fool is making noise about coming back. It can't get any better than that, right?
To the Vikings? Yeah. Is that what I read?
Yeah, and not only that, but can you just see how many times do they play Green Bay? You know, I will be there to look at that.
Yeah. I was going to tell you, Marty's chimed in again. He says, try going to a Raiders home game wearing Broncos colors, especially during the John Elway era. One day, he says, I'll call and relate a story about my first Raiders home game in Oakland wearing my orange and blue. And, yeah, I was referring to the number of non-important tabloid stories that come up to direct the attention of the American people.
He's right about the Raiders. Wow, you really take your life when you go there. But, anyway, listen, I got to go. That was a...
Oh, what a fun way to start a Friday.
Yes. Have a good time.
Take care, Sandra.
All right, bye.
Bye now. Oh. Well, a little, and why not? It's Friday, a little sports talk. What the heck? Hey, welcome to the program, Juanita.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Getting along. Having fun on a Friday. We gotta relax sometime. Mix up a little football, a little Nancy Pelosi.
I'll tell you, they've screwed up my football team down here.
The Dolphins or
the Bucks.
Well.
I mean, I know it was already screwed up, but, I mean, they let go a lot of good people. I mean, it just, I don't even know if I even want to watch them. I know one time we had one guy down here that I got where I wouldn't even watch him because he was the coach, and he was from, he came down from the Bengals, and I forget his name, Sam somebody, and...
Oh, yeah, y'all, yeah.
And I just get so disgusted with I got so disgusted with him, and I didn't even watch him for a long time before. But anyhow, yeah, that's my game is football. But
one of my favorite quotes from all of sports history comes from the very earliest days of the Buccaneers. Who was it? The first coach
of the Bucks. I
don't
know if that's the one I watched or not.
John McKay or John Robinson, I can't remember which.
I wasn't really watching them back.
They were so terrible back then.
Well, yeah.
You know, they were the equivalent of the 62 Mets in baseball, and at a press conference. Some sports reporter asked the coach, what would you think of your team's what are your thoughts on your team's execution today? And he said, I'm in favor of it.
Oh, that's my son about that bad. Which one? I can't believe it. But, to me,
John McKay,
the owners, because we get somebody that could work out really well and has played really well and get rid of them, and then you don't know what you got. And we don't hardly have any of the team left that we know anything about. It's almost all going to be new people. So I don't know. I just don't even know if I'm going to watch them.
You probably will.
I probably
will. What else are you going to do on a Sunday afternoon?
Oh, work in my garden. I got some of the cutest little corn coming up.
Is it still there?
Yeah. Well, it's all little, you know.
Yeah, but the birds haven't gotten it?
No, I've got it, you know, hid away. I've got to slowly get the stuff out in the sun and whatever. But anyway, what I'm calling about was something that just happened here in Florida. One of the many things.
You know, there are two places on Earth it would be fun to be a liberal talk show host, more so than maybe here. One of them's Florida and the other one's Texas.
Well, this is not funny.
Oh, sorry.
I was telling Ferg about it, and we had a middle school down here somewhere in Central Florida. I forget the name of it. And four of the football players raped another football player.
Oh, with Lord.
Hockey stick and broom handles. And they're like 13, 14. And they're already putting their names on the air. They're going to be charged as adults.
You know, that's a tough case for me, because my gut instinct is, yeah, charge them as adults, but without a doubt.
And it's white and black, you know.
This is in team hazing, and it's god awful, and it's beastly, and it's cruel.
But where have you heard that they do that?
Well,
torture.
Look, we are a nation that tortures. We torture in middle school. We torture in our prison system. We put, we torture medical students in the process of becoming doctors via the residency requirements.
Oh, Lord, yes. That is torture. That is awful. But it just, to me, I've been saying that they're going to start, you know, they imitate all the wrestling moves and all like that. They're going to, you know, you're going to hear more, and I'm sure it's going on more than we know about, that is being practiced, you know. And the thing is, the dadgum, like you and Sandra were talking about, the dadgum people in charge of all this are getting away with it. And I want something done. This country will never be right until something is done. Why should kids do any better? I mean, and they think they'll probably get away with it because these people are getting away with it. And like Sandra said about the elite are the one that gets away with all this stuff. And it's just, I don't know. We had a man, he was arrested just a day or two ago for throwing a little baby out the car window.
I saw that.
Highway.
Oh, God.
You heard about that?
Yeah. And I see stories like that, Juanita, and I think, well, you know, I could try to handle that on the air. But what's there to say about it?
Well, the police and all, you know, they said it was just awful, you know, the baby was just so messed up, you know. Imagine. You can only imagine. And it was a beautiful, beautiful baby.
They all are.
And, anyway.
it's like something I've seen coming out of these shooting stories. There's always a sheriff or something on hand to offer the comment, well, this was a senseless act, and I can't imagine why anybody, there's just no way to explain why this would happen. Of course there is.
It's the mindset.
There's a perfectly rational explanation for why these monstrosities happen. If you are willing to be honest enough and engage in a searching exploration of the nature of this society, there's a perfectly cogent answer for why people go crazy with guns. And why people throw babies out windows.
Yeah.
And it's not acceptable just, well, he was crazy. No, it's not crazy. He's not individually crazy. The culture is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I believe that's
so. You know, we have people that run riot with guns and blow away schools and the shopping malls and the cafeterias and whatnot. We have that because, Juanita, we want it. We want those. Because if we didn't want them, we would not be doing the things that lead to them.
Yeah.
If we didn't want those kinds of things, if we didn't want people to shoot up restaurants or stores or whatever, we would not have a culture that prizes the ownership of firearms over the ability of an ordinary American to simply live their lives. If we didn't want babies thrown out on roadways, we wouldn't have a culture where the rich and what Sandra calls out the elite are constantly preaching at us about how bad people are simply because they're not rich.
Right.
Sorry, I'm not yelling at you, dear. You know.
It's very frustrating, and it is interesting about Nancy Pelosi now. I heard her the other day explaining why she didn't really know anything like that was going on. She said that she was told, she claimed she was told that these things would be okay, but she was never told that they were being done. Well, we knew after Abu Ghraib, you know, we knew.
Well, and here's something interesting to sort of roll around in your mind. She came out and said, "Well, you know, I didn't know." And this was the Obama administration's director of national intelligence memo that was put out. Okay, it came from the Obama. It came, you know, because that organization is within the executive branch. So somebody in the Obama administration had to say, "Yeah, release it." So what does that say about the relationship between the White House and Nancy Pelosi?
Oh, Lord, Bob, I don't know.
Do you understand? I'm not trying to be cute or anything, but I think for all of the frustration that we feel when President Obama says, "Well, we're going to look forward and not back."
Yeah, I hate that.
That drives me batty. But by the same token, when you've got apparently there is enough integrity there that when Nancy Pelosi's out there lying her hind end off, well, they're gonna let out the facts and let the people judge for themselves.
Well, good. Did you hear them the other day? I think it was yesterday that they threatened. They were having a hearing and they threatened. The Attorney General, that if he went ahead with investigations of the Bush administration, that they were going to have Clinton investigated for what he did on those things. I said, I don't care. Go ahead. If he did something like that, too, let him be found out.
Yeah. Was the Clinton administration ordering people tortured?
If they were, they're trying to say.
Let's clear the air. Clear the air.
They said it in a hearing.
Oh, I know. I think it was
Alexander,
the Plaid Avenger.
The plaid shirt guy.
Yeah, the Plaid Avenger.
Yeah, and so you know, it just all rolls into one. You know, it's like. We the people we speak up and they say, "Oh, write them and do this and that." How many times have we signed petitions? How many emails? How many letters have been sent out? You know, it's just
how much do we have to beg?
Petition.
Yeah. How long do we have to beg?
Yeah. And Nancy Pelosi, you know, she had people protesting in front of her home, and she said she couldn't call the law on them because they were.
Oh, yeah, I remember how snide she was about it. Oh, they're protected by the First Amendment, so I've got to put up with them. Ew.
Well, did you hear about this hearing that so-called, it wasn't like a hearing, I guess it was like a, it wasn't, the public wasn't invited to ask any questions. It was on, what to do about the medical system.
Yes.
You heard about that?
Yeah, where where they didn't even afford people in favor of single payer an opportunity to be heard.
And so forth.
Right.
And they arrested them. They got up and spoke. And they were carried out, taken out in handcuffs and taken to jail. And that was Backus. He's the senator from.
Our buddy
was head of it.
Our buddy Dennis forwarded me a segment from Ed Schultz's show about it, and even Ed Schultz gets this one right.
It's not right.
That's no, but I mean Ed got the issue right.
Oh yeah.
You know that this does need to be discussed. This does deserve.
And nobody was allowed to answer questions, and most of the people there were insurance companies and, you know, people like that.
Right.
People that give them a lot of money, I'm sure. But, yeah, how long?
I know.
It'll be like in Egypt with the...
How long, oh Lord, how long? Yeah, I know.
You know, but anyway, that... And did you look at those pictures I sent you of that woman that got shot?
Yes.
One more, just a little bit more, and half her head been blown off at least.
Yeah, that didn't quite. What did Shannon Burke call that? A scratch?
A scratch.
Yeah. It's a heck of a scratch.
Yeah.
But then again, you know, when you're all juiced up with the roids, as we have we suspect he is. Your perception of reality is significantly diminished, and you say things like, no pain, no gain.
He said it. Well, he didn't know the gun was loaded, and he was mad because he was trying to shoot the gun. It would shoot, and he loaded it up again.
Guys
so
out there.
Lied right there.
Yeah. Needs to be at a Roids Anonymous meeting with Manny Ramirez.
But I was just, when I saw that one picture of her, you know, that one long scratch.
Yes, right, yeah, scratch.
Good, not a living. The reason I ask you if you have seen it, it was hard for me to look at it. My computer has just gotten so slow lately.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's so slow it never comes. But anyhow, I think that's about all I was calling about, but we need to do something. I'm aggravated, too, with this walk-in clinic that I went to. They charged me for seeing a doctor. I didn't say charged me $100. I didn't even see a doctor. I went for blood work for another doctor. Did not, and they're trying.
Well, you know, there's that for-profit medical system churning out the best health care in the world.
And they're trying to charge me more than the blood work would have cost, saying that I owe that. And then I try to call the insurance people. I've got like a HMO with Medicare. And I called them, and I got somebody with a thick accent, you know, and they never could understand. They kept saying, well, the reason we refuse to pay, blah, blah. I said, no, y'all paid. I said, don't you care that you got cheated? Because that could be a racket, charging people.
Sure is.
If I had never worked in insurance, I probably wouldn't have known it. But they sent. And this is from last November, just now sending me this bill. And, I mean, it's not a whole lot, but it's aggravating to think that they charged me $100 to see a doctor, and I never saw no doctor.
And
the insurance company, you know, was trying to talk to the guy, and I told him, I said, you know, I said, maybe I'm not explaining myself well enough. And then he said, well, explain it to you. I said, no, I've explained it to you about three times now, and you still don't understand, so why should I do it again? And, you know, I like that those people are doing well, but those kind of jobs are people that are people over here. And I'm sure, he definitely had an Indian accent, and he was nice. Some of them aren't.
Well, but remember the story coming out of Florida from a couple of nights ago, Juanita, people trying to get help with their food stamps.
I know, isn't that crazy that it goes overseas?
Yeah. You sent me that story, didn't you?
I don't know. I've heard it, so I don't know. It just is. You know, now, like, I could do things like that. Now, I can't work out. I have a problem that keeps me from being able to work for very many hours. And I could do something like that at home and supplement my income.
Sure.
A lot of people that are out of work, I mean, what did they say? They more half a million people already this month have lost jobs?
Yeah, it's not inspiring. However, the job losses this month were actually lower than what was forecast, so some people are taking that as a sign of good news. But for the people who lost their jobs,
yeah,
it's not
really
much good news.
People that don't have work.
No, it doesn't.
And, you know, I can really relate to being working, and then you lose your job. I've lost jobs many times and be out of work, and then you have to go down again, even if you never were high on the ladder of making money. You got to go down again. You start all over again, and it's just you think you'll never live to see Medicare, and people say, you know, here you're probably 10 years away from being able to get Medicare. Oh, you'll soon get Medicare. Well, what good does that do me then? You know, when and there's nothing. It's just nothing out there. And, you know, I come from the stock where they believe in working for a living, but, you know, sometime it would be nice to get some help. And I have gotten help some, but mighty little.
Yeah, mighty little. Well, that's that trickle down economics for you.
Yeah.
You got your trickle. What are you complaining about?
I know. Sometimes that trickle leaks out on the ground. You don't get it.
No kidding.
But I'm tired of these people that big shots being there be bailed out, but not us. We've got people down here still losing their homes and they can't get no help. And I'm tired of that. You know, I'm tired of we the people doing without.
I'm hard pressed to say anything because you're
not just myself. I have
No. You are absolutely nailing it, Juanita, and ever so much better than I could ever say it.
Well, thank you. I'm glad I'm making some sense. And
you're making more sense than I make in 3 hours some nights.
But I still go back into that torture thing. I'm sorry, but I think a lot of that, you know, has been inspired, is inspiring these kids.
Of course it does. And now I'm going to go one more place and put a little bit of depth on it. But this makes sense to me. The neo-Calvinist religious nature of this country feeds into it, too. Because Christianity, as it developed after the ideological debates that lay at its core, that are historically documented, when the debate was won by people who wanted to worship Jesus for how he died versus how he lived, When that side won the debate and Christianity went forward and grew and flourished, all of Western civilization from that point forward was put into a mindset that actually revered torture.
I guess so.
Because the early church, you know, all the martyrs. Well, I'm just going to go and die like my Lord. Well, he don't want you to die like he died. He wants you to live like he lived. But that was lost on the early church. Nope, just nail me up upside down. That'll be fine. And it creates a profoundly messed up culture. Because, you know, Christianity, from those earliest days going forward, became a death cult.
Well, you heard about the criticism Obama got because he didn't go to that big prayer meeting.
Oh, you know, I do, and it's a dadgum frustrating and flusternating that I almost don't. If they just Juanita, if they just quit lying, the other side. If that,
well,
you know, you can carry.
It wouldn't matter if he'd have gone, they'd have turned that around and twisted that around.
Sure. That's true, too. But, you know, if you've got somebody that you've got a disagreement with, and you say, no, we need 16 penny nails, and you're building a doghouse.
Uh-huh.
And you say, we need 16 penny nails, and the other person says, no, we need 10 penny nails, and you say, no, we need the 16 penny nails because it'll hold it together better.
Uh-huh.
And the other guy says, no, we need 10 penny nails because Jesus likes 10 penny nails.
Yeah.
You can't carry on a conversation with that person. By the same token with these pig lickings, you know, here we are saying we need 16 penny nails, and there's the other side saying nails are evil.
Yeah.
Using nails is liberal. Well, how can you have a rational discussion about how this nation goes forward with somebody who's making that kind of patently irrational argument?
You can't. Just like that guy that you talked to the other day, I just was so glad I got to hear that. Now, he is number two things he assumed about you. He assumed that you didn't know anything about the Bible. He assumed that you were probably gay. And he really assumed it later on. But you know what I mean? It was condescending. And he's talking about fearing for himself. Well, if he's a real Christian, that is a sin to fear. Fear is a sin because it means you don't trust God. And I'm talking about that kind of baloney fear. And, you know, but the one thing I was really proud when you told him that he was going to hell and that you'd be in paradise, you'd be throwing ice cubes.
Tease him at the gates of hell with ice cubes?
Yeah.
That's not mine. That
was terrific.
That's from the Agnes Greatest Hits album. And that's hers, and I owe her for it because it comes in so handy. There's nothing like telling a fundamentalist. There's nothing quite like the look, and I'd love to have had video. There's nothing quite like telling a fundamentalist that you're going to tease him at the gates of hell with ice cubes.
Yeah, and another thing, you know, when he said, well, how many gays have you helped today? I've helped, what, did he say, 60? To lead them away?
Yeah, to cure them. Yeah, to cure them.
Oh, bull.
Yeah. And see, I was in the moment, and I didn't have everything handy, but
well, you did plenty.
No, it would have been so fun. Pastor, is Ted Haggard still cured?
Yeah. Well, you know that Ted Haggard gave up.
Yeah, he did.
But he couldn't take that cure anymore.
And it's because it's not a cure, and it's not a cure because it's not a disease.
Well, the thing is that anything that you know, it's that's between. You know, myself and I, or myself and God, or whatever, that's not, you can't shove things down somebody's throat. And it's not right to make take away somebody else's rights. Because you're afraid? Live that life for a while and see how afraid you are.
There you go. Yeah.
You know Judy Blume, the...
Oh, yeah, the fundamentalists just go crazy over her.
Yeah, she was, you know, she's openly gay and all, and she has a child, you know, and anyway, she said that these murderers, you know, they can get married, but she can't. He's murdered.
And, well, you know, when that freak asked me, you know, how many gay people have you helped?
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want to be egomaniacal about it, but the fact of the matter is, it's not what I did, but, you know, we put the horn was part of a brilliant effort by Peter Godbold for over a year.
Yeah, I know Peter.
That reached out and created conversation space mm-hmm. for the gay community and for the better understanding of the straight community.
Yeah.
And I don't know if any gay folk got any good out of that. but I got a feeling they did. And so to that extent, you know, I would have happily said, you know, a hell of a lot, I've helped a hell of a lot more than you have, Pastor.
Yeah. That man would not comprehend it. He's making a big living off of what he's doing, and you're
right because he does not have ears to hear nor eyes to see.
Right. I think you're probably right about where he's going.
That's
not for me to say, but
right, right. You know, either metaphysically, I think on the one hand, metaphysically, he's going to hell if there was one. But on a more temporal and probably immediate basis, he probably goes to the men's restroom in some airport, you know, once or twice a week, too.
Yeah.
Because he's just got that tattooed all over him. Yeah, that it sounds to me like that man's world is one big closet.
Yeah. Well, we found out on a lot of them, you know, haven't we?
Yeah, we have.
It's come out.
Exactly. Juanita, wonderful comment.
They would hate their own kind so much, you know. I don't know. It's bad.
Well, it's like that story I cited, though, Wednesday night. The biggest homophobes are usually the biggest closet cases.
Yeah.
And that's scientific stuff. That's not me just saying something. There's science that backs that up.
Well, you know those brothers that I got together. You remember that?
Yes.
They look just from looks alone. They look like they all look alike. They sure look like brothers, and that includes that guy from Colorado. Christian, him and his wife is just as bad.
They do have a similarity of appearance, don't they?
Yeah, it's something about them
about them makes you want to take a shower.
It don't necessarily mean they look gay. It means they look abnormal or something. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Because there is no gay, really gay look.
No, there isn't. But no, there's that, and maybe it's not a look. Maybe it's just an overall impression. But I know exactly what you're talking about. And
yeah.
I know, and like Potter Stewart said about pornography, I know it when I see it.
Yeah.
I can't describe it, but I think we all have whether it's Joel Osteen or Ted Haggard or any of these flim-flam artists, Kenneth Copeland, spot them from a mile away.
Yeah, it's...
And what you're describing doesn't have to do with sexuality so much as it does with a larcenous heart. It has to do with a larcenous heart. You can spot somebody...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You can spot somebody who's running a con.
I think
and they're running that con inside their own lives and with regard to the public as well.
And you know, you can lie to yourself for so long, and sometimes some people it'll catch up with them. It's just what if that guy that died, you know, that started all this stuff, the guy that died, and he was repenting of it. The one that started the
you're talking about Lee Atwater.
Yeah, his conscience caught up with him. Now, I'm not saying all of them, it will for all of them, but it could very well. You know, your conscience can eat on you even if you don't give a happy.
Yep, exactly.
For others, you know.
I know. Juanita, it's been a wonderful conversation. I hope you have a great weekend. We will talk soon, dear.
You too.
And go out and tend gently that lovely corn poking its little leaves, leaves through the soil.
It's so cute.
Yeah, they are adorable when they're little like that.
Yeah.
is it when they're little tiny like that you get the baby corn like you get in the Chinese food? No, stop it. Never mind.
Well, this is supposed to be sweet corn of some kind, so I'm hoping.
We'll keep our fingers crossed. Take care, Juanita. Bye now.
Okay, night-night.
That's our View correspondent, Juanita, who has so many valid observations on the nature of our existence. Before I go to the phones again, a couple more from the mailbag. Our pal Mara writes in, how about using the RICO statutes as to conspiracy to commit war crimes with regard to Pelosi? I'm game. I wonder, I bet you there's some smart lawyer in the Justice Department could make that stick. Whatever it takes, the woman's got to get out of the out of the speaker's chair. We've got to have someone with some integrity in there, someone who can actually get things. How about? No, okay, fantasy moment. Dennis Kucinich, Speaker of the House. There we go. But there are others. There are others who would be suitable to fill that office and make it an office of decency and honor. But I don't think any of the present leadership qualifies. And also this from our pal William. Here we have Pelosi in 2006 with all the children as a friendly homebrew photo op. Then what we have are hypocrites swearing on a Bible to hold up the Constitution. This Bible seems to act as an insulator between their promise and what they will actually do and lie about, just like we have electrical insulators to protect the user from shock. Yep. It's the Bible's one, for some people, the Bible is one big set of crossed fingers. Have my fingers crossed. They stand there spouting God bless America and lie about torture. Again, the spouting acts like their own personal insulator that is there to insulate us from the truth. In the Beltway, they have their brotherhood and shield. We will never be allowed to see see the actual truth. GW lowered the bar so damn low that almost anyone looks good. And through the years, the amount of money to finance a campaign has been raised to the point where the honest people running who just might represent the people will never pass through that door. Issues like campaign funding reform and the black box voting machines have just evaporated. One does wonder why this is and what the Repiglicans know about this that we will never know. Thanks, William. All very true. All very true. Our buddy David in South Carolina notes that if Nancy Pelosi steps down, his congressman Jim Clyburn, if he's clean, as it were, then he'd be almost at the top. David, would you vouchsafe him in the speaker's chair? Not calling you out or anything, just I'm not sure enough about Clyburn to know. Be interesting to hear. Onward, and hope she's still there. Hey, Susan.
Hi there.
How are you?
Well, I got a couple things. But first of all, for Juanita, regarding the doctor who was cheating her, since she's on Medicare, he was also probably cheating Medicare, in which case she needs to go to www.medicare.gov and type in the word abuse in the search box up at the top of the page and click on search. The third link from the top, click on that, and it will tell her how to go about reporting Medicare fraud. And that will bring a goon squad down on that doctor that will make his life a living hell.
Good.
He will have the postal inspectors, the IRS, oh, God, you would not believe it. He will have at least, I can't think of them right off the top of my head, but I think it's something like 8 separate government agencies after his butt. And they will walk in and they will tell his staff, move away from the computers, do not touch anything. Everything in this office
is a crime scene.
Is hereby seized. Here's the warrant.
That could work.
Yep.
And see, as we contemplate something like a not profit based healthcare plan, cheating doctors, we do have to be aware of.
There's an added incentive in case she doesn't really want to feel like doing this. You know, she says, you know, Juanita's a nice person. There's a real added incentive. If they feel it's warranted and they go in and they find out that there is abuse and there is an award you know, levied against this doctor. The person who reported the abuse gets a percentage.
Oh! There's a bounty?
You bet your butt.
Wasn't that another one of those After the Rifleman and Branded? Wasn't that another one of those Chuck Connors shows, The Bounty Hunter?
Yep.
God, how does my what's wrong with my mind that it does that?
But I have that kind of trivia too.
Yeah, and then, and since we've already had a Manny Ramirez discussion and he plays for the Dodgers, I just clicked on it. Yeah, wasn't he a first baseman for the Dodgers for like a cup of coffee or something, Chuck Connors?
Oh, cripe, I don't know.
Yeah, I think so.
I was never into baseball, I'm afraid. I'm like Juanita. Hey, if she thinks she's got it bad.
Oh, I love it. You guys are coming out of the woodwork tonight. We got Susan, we got Juanita, and we got Sandra.
Yeah.
Good liberals sitting there quietly digging their NFL.
Yeah, and I'm a Seahawks follower, and if you don't think that's hard, oh, God. I'm afraid the Hawks are the laughing stock of the NFL. Well, hey, they are.
Well, see, and then that, you know, that's, growing up, I was a, and this made no sense whatsoever except for the fact that I was growing up in not very cold Alabama, and I was just, and I've talked about it before, I was just enchanted, entranced, by the frozen tundra of the Minnesota Vikings and just loved them. You know what I had to root for as a kid growing up in the South, being of my age? I had to choose between the Atlanta Falcons and the New Orleans Saints. Like when you'd go into Sears and they'd have the jerseys there. They'd have Atlanta, you know, for kids. They'd have Atlanta jerseys and New Orleans jerseys. And occasionally a Cowboys jersey. And that's where most people that I grew up with defaulted to, and hence my early and persistent loathing of all things Cowboys. Sorry, Texas listeners, I apologize.
I have the same thing, only I got stuck with Broncos.
Well, now see, yeah, exactly. You know, they regionalize it. So I remember, I guess it was my 10th.
There's one thing I could not stand. It was Elway.
It was my 10th Christmas when I got my Sears brand Minnesota Vikings Fran Tarkenton jersey with the 10 on the back. And I cherished
really
it.
I loved it.
And I cherished it until the numbers washed off, like on the third washing.
Yeah, I dearly loved Franny. I loved my Purple People Eaters. Of course, I'm one of those people that can actually remember that Jets game.
Oh,
the Heidi game.
Yeah, the Heidi. Yeah, Heidi Bowl. Oh mercy! Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, here's the reason I actually called in.
Oh, okay.
Now that we got the fun stuff out of the way. There is a silver lining to this Pelosi thing. If Obama wants to grab it, here is the opportunity for the Obama administration to prove conclusively that this is not a witch hunt, by making the very first person to go down the Speaker of the House, a Democrat.
Well, and I mean...
And then go after the Republicans like a fury.
Yep, you're next. Yeah, I know. And I mean, that's what I find kind of surprising out of the story is that the dime was dropped inside the Obama administration that got this memo out.
It could very well be that they're clearing the decks and getting ready to actually do it. Knock on wood, I'm not going to hold my breath, but...
I just applied knuckles to my skull when you said knock on wood.
I'm not going to say the obvious. I really am not.
It's too easy. Oh, and by the way, this in from our Denver Broncos fan Marty, with tongue firmly in cheek, please tell Susan that the heathen shall not speak of John in the presence of virtual or otherwise a Broncos fan. Remember, tongue in cheek. God, I love you guys.
But I could never handle the Broncos. It's especially once I moved into, we moved to Idaho for a few, for about 10 years. Oh, God, that was 10 years in purgatory.
Oh, my favorite from way back in the day, my favorite O.J. Simpson joke was that when they were when they were initially trying to capture him, they accidentally arrested John Elway because the APB from the LAPD said be on the lookout for a slow moving white Bronco.
Not bad. I like that one.
Yeah, because all the others were so sleazy, and but that one was just But, you know, there's truisms out there, you know, and I love this stuff.
Have you seen the deal, those ads? I don't know if you've seen them on TV, but just to show you how far the Cowboys have fallen, there's a reality show.
Oh, yeah, about being a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader?
No.
Oh.
This is a football player.
Oh, yeah. That's that guy who goes, he's on the Travel Channel. Who goes around trying different sports all over the world, right?
No. This is different.
There's another one?
There's going to be another reality show.
I got to get a TV back here.
It's a spot on the squad.
What's it called? Who Wants to Be Terrell Owens?
I don't know. I've only seen ads, and you can bet your bippy. I'm not going to be watching it. I don't watch that kind of crap.
On Fox?
No, I don't think so. I've seen ads for it on, I think it was MSNBC.
You know, I remember when there was no such thing as reality television and you had a reasonable chance of running across a decent television show once in a while, but
yeah,
those days are gone.
I know. I watch a lot of old movies these days. You know, there's always, when in doubt, there's always Casablanca or Lady Hawk or I understand your wife just recently ran across Lady Hawk. But, you know, that's how even the Seahawks haven't gotten that bad yet.
True. But don't tempt fate.
They've kind of accepted their position as the Cubs of the NFL.
Now, come on. They were in the Super Bowl not long, that long back.
Yeah, and they blew it, too.
Yeah, but if you've been there, you've got to, you know, I mean, if you've been there, there's a chance that you'll go back. I mean, my God, the Cardinals were in the Super Bowl last year. I mean, that's one of those only in America kind of, it can happen to anybody. There's no Cubs, you know, this is like a modification of a religious statement. There are no Cubs, but Cubs. And, And tragedy is their hallmark. I mean, my God, I had a story not too long back about a, the statue of, is there a statue of Harry Carey in Chicago? And it was found with a goat's head hanging off it? Somebody trying to break the curse of the goat?
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean, and it's not like, you know, it's not necessarily like saying, hey, let's go slaughter a goat and cut its head off and hang it on a statue. No, I mean, you know, there's a significant segment of the population in Chicago where you can go to butcher shops and buy a goat's head, you know, for things like goat's head soup.
Yeah.
And somebody, yeah. But, yeah, I think the entire country would feel good if the Cubs got well, but there are some things you need in this world, and the Cubs being the Cubs are one of them. Sorry, Cubs fans.
Yeah. By the way, KFC has canceled the free chicken deal after the Oprah promo caused overwhelming demand.
Oh, God.
And, you know, the guy...
I thought reality was coming loose when David was telling me that the other night, David from Maine.
Yeah. You know, the guy who okayed that overflight of New York City?
Yeah.
He's resigned.
Good. Didn't even have to be fired.
That's true. That was one of the more boat-headed stunts I've ever heard of.
Yeah, that was not the bright stuff.
All they had to do was say, hey, guys, here's something you're not going to see very often. Come down to Battery Park, bring your cameras, bring a blanket and a picnic lunch. You get to see the plane that sometimes flies Air Force One, and then do your thing. Everybody would have loved it.
We want it to be a surprise. Surprise!
Yeah, it was a surprise, okay.
Yeah.
I don't understand these people.
Yeah, no, not even a little bit.
I think he was one of the Bush holdovers.
Surprised it wasn't Brownie.
Yeah, and just to make things... shall we say, back to normal.
Mm-hmm.
President Obama is going to fire, or I should say, he's going to kick out of the army. His first translator.
Yeah, I saw that. Is it gonna or has already been? Because the story I saw said Arabic translator canned for being, you know, violating don't ask, don't tell.
Yeah, because but the thing is, Obama has the, as the commander-in-chief, has the ability to say, hold it here. We're going to think about this for a bit.
Well, did you catch the ironic flip side to this story? Now, this individual, Dan Choi, graduate of West Point, and he's an Army National Guard officer, fluent in Arabic.
Yeah.
Came out of the closet as a gay man on national television. And he is, yeah, and he's being discharged from the National Guard.
Morals clause.
Right. Well, okay, so that's the one side of it. The other side of this is the story of Sandy Tsao, an Army officer out of St. Louis, Missouri, who came out of the closet to her superiors. And she wrote, immediately sat down and wrote a letter to President Obama.
Yeah, she's got a handwritten
2 days note. 2 days ago, she got a handwritten note from the president. Thanks for the wonderful and thoughtful letter. It is because of outstanding Americans like you that I committed to changing our current policy. Although it will take some time to complete, partly because it needs congressional action, I intend to fulfill my commitment! Exclamation point, Barack Obama. Well, a start to that might, if it is within his power, a start to that might be to not let us lose an Arabic linguist. Because, you know, we don't have a surfeit of those that we can afford to lose.
We've already kicked out over 12,500 people. That's over a brigade. And this is when they can't recruit enough people to go, and this guy says he wants to deploy again? What's wrong with that picture? It doesn't bother his unit. Because he went in for training with his unit after he came out, and didn't bother him, didn't bother his superiors. So this unit cohesion crap is just that, crap.
Well, it's all the arguments in favor of continuing to persecute people for their sexuality within the military are crap. Oh, by the way, gear shift real quick. I'm reminded in the chat room to note to you that another problem the Seahawks have is the fact that they employ the husband of Elizabeth Hasselbeck.
Well, that's another problem.
I mean, could you be a competent quarterback day in and day out if you had to listen to her?
That voice.
Yeah. It explains, you know, some things have explanations that may seem, maybe actually plainer than what we know.
Of course, then again, that doesn't excuse all the other quarterbacks we've had.
True. Very true. Very true. Well, Susan, wonderful conversation. And thanks for the heads up for Juanita.
Okay. And say hello to everybody in West Virginia for me.
I sure will. And hey to Donald, and have a wonderful weekend.
Okie doke.
All right.
It appears that the AFCA thing is forcing Spector to move.
Oh, really?
Yeah. There's a thing. It says, Feinstein Spector compromises. Pay the way for passage of employee free choice. I don't know what the compromises are, though.
Well, you know, that's one of the things. Rick Smith talked about some of those compromises, and they're almost, as he put it, worse than not having EFCA at all.
Yeah.
So it remains to be seen what kind of compromise this is.
Yeah, I'm going to have to work on that.
But why would Pelosi be compromising with him instead of Reid?
No, it said Feinstein.
Oh, Feinstein. I'm sorry. Got my creepy California representatives mixed up. That's not a slur on California. It's just, no, they're just Feinstein, Pelosi. They're both, but, you know.
Yeah, I understand. Well, yeah, have a nice weekend.
All right. Take care, Susan.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye now. All right, and let's just keep things rolling along. About 8 minutes before the hour. Light up the phone lines. We've got about an hour left in the conversation. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333, and let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Preston.
Hey, Preston, how are you?
Doing pretty good. Speaking of California, I guess that fire keeps raging.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be a huge issue. One thing that Obama has done is appoint people like, I think his name's like Chu or something like that.
Oh,
American guy.
Yeah, Stephen Chu.
Yeah, and he made a comment about how if we continue on this course, California may be kind of uninhabitable in about 20 years. Something occurring like what's going on in southern Australia right now, where people are starting to migrate from southern Australia because of this climate change. The thing's so dry and them having these fires of the century like every couple of years, the most recent one killing 200 people.
Right.
Yeah. So, yeah. They've got a lot to deal with these days, and I don't know. We'll see what happens. Like, you know, they keep getting, Sean Hannity's running interference for the fossil fuel industry all the time and the car industry. But, they're still getting some things passed, some cuts in carbons and whatnot.
Yeah, by fits and starts. The Waxman Markey is out there, and we're hoping to get some weight behind that. But it's one of those situations where the wheels grind exceeding slow, and we're waiting to see how fine they grind. But it's frustrating waiting. There's no doubt about that.
It is. And, you know, so many solutions are out there. Most recently, I found a book by a guy who, it's called Living Above the Store. And the author got his PhD in literature from Harvard and an MBA from Northwestern. And now he lives in Savannah, Georgia, where he's a green builder and, just doing some amazing things. He, developed this building. That offers hydro-powered apartments in Savannah.
Wow.
And, yeah, I thought that was interesting. And they're utilizing these hydropower turbine things that were built in like 1895. They just had to update them, and they're good to go. So, you know, it's a lot of this stuff isn't necessarily some new future technology that has to be developed at MIT. I mean, some of it's been developed in our past. So.
Well, that's absolutely true. I was reading something the other day that, windmills. You know, we act like they're something. Well, you know, the technology does, because we hear this from the colistas constantly. Well, you know, the technology for windmills may come along sometime, but it's certainly not ready yet. You know, I hate to break it to these sad little corporatist freaks.
Right, right.
The Persians had windmills in the 7th century B.C. That's, you know, the technology's been cooking along for a while. I think we can probably make pretty good use of it now. 700 years B.C., you know, I mean, think about what was going on in 700 B.C. That's along about the time, I guess, what David, Solomon in the Bible. 700 B.C., you're getting the first stirrings of meaningful government on the Attic Peninsula. 700 B.C., let's see, that's 53 years after the founding of Rome.
Okay.
Windmills have been around on the planet since then.
Yeah, yeah.
But the coal people are, the technology just doesn't exist. It's like what I said with Juanita. How can you carry on a meaningful discussion or debate or dialogue about how this country goes forward with someone who, no matter what you say, no matter how much reason you put behind it, no matter how much science, no matter how much common sense, the other side argues by lying?
Yeah, and a very disciplined groupthink. It's interesting. I connected with somebody over Facebook, and there's some things about the war on drugs that she apparently didn't want to hear because she has a nice career in it, you know, and so these rationalizations to put in cages your fellow citizens because they've got the wrong herb. And, while these other people have, you know, Viagra and Ritalin and Prozac and all that coursing through their veins.
Good.
So, but real quickly, before I forget, I wanted to get back to the hydropower department.
Yes.
There's a little write-up about it. It says there are two hydro turbines at Enterprise Mill which provide electrical power to the commercial and residential complex. And that's why the book's called Living Above the Store, because it's about mixing, dual use or triple use, you know, commercial and residential and maybe,
right,
you know, governmental libraries, whatever. The entire hydroelectric station is capable of producing over 6 million kilowatts of electricity per year, and Enterprise Mill uses around 4 million annually, with the rest of the electricity being sold back to the grid through Georgia Power.
Beautiful.
Yeah, this is exactly what's needed. And, you know, that's going on in Georgia. I kind of like, too. You know, it's not Berkeley. So, this means electric bills are under market rates. These turbines were originally constructed and installed around 1890. The turbines ceased to function in the latter half of the 20th century, but have now been restored to their original function. And it goes on to say that, you know, this isn't like some big, massive mega dam that is so destructive, and that what Edward Abbey raged about, and people in South America are resisting. These are small. This is small hydropower, and it has this big section about the water feeds from a canal without disrupting the natural hydrology of the canal. Apparently it meets this required flow levels to provide a good aquatic habitat for wildlife. In turn, fish, wildlife, and recreation are undisturbed, and you know, fish can make it through okay, amphibians and all that good stuff. So, again, a light footprint. You know, we don't have to smash all the turtles and everything.
Right.
Salmon. You know, we're doing to the salmon now very much what was done to the buffalo. You know, wiping out this species, that native.
Well,
people.
Yeah. Do you remember that series of articles in the Washington Post that was just that was about Dick Cheney called Angler?
No.
It was like 3 or 4 days worth or something, and they described how his ham-fisted intervention in the American West, in the American Northwest, had resulted in fish kills that debilitated the salmon fishing industry.
Okay.
And you know that's the very heart of sustainability. You want the salmon to exist because, well, salmon are lovely fish, I guess. But you want the salmon to continue to exist because the continued existence of the salmon provides the continued existence of a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, it's benefit. I mean, I hope I'm not pissing off any of our vegan or vegetarian friends, but it's good food that's good for people.
Yeah,
that's why entire indigenous cultures developed around the ability to harvest salmon.
Yep.
So,
And I don't want to piss off vegetarians and vegans, and you know I respect that food choice.
Sure.
I experimented with it myself. I ate less, but you know I'm not strict about it. Veg News actually is one of my favorite magazines, and again I'm not a vegetarian, but it's really well done, informative magazine. I love the Green Party ticket. So often it was, you know, Nader, who became a vegetarian after his brother had some health issues, and vegetarianism worked out well for him. Meanwhile, Winona LaDuke was, you know, an Ojibwe lady. And she very much was not a vegetarian. She's like, oh, no. She was speaking to a group in Wyoming at University of Wyoming, and she said, I guess some of you all in the audience are vegetarians, but not us. We eat as much meat as we can get our hands on. And, you know, they're fishing out of their lakes, and they're, you know, hunting, and but doing a lot of gathering, too. They grow their own wild rice. But still, I like that combining of the two approaches on the Green Party ticket. And you know, there doesn't have to be this battle between, you know, segments of different sorts of eaters, you know.
Well, exactly. And you hit on the magic word there, balance. You've got to have, there's got to be protein in the diet. And, you know, one of the things that we forget is that the single greatest protein source that is not meat-based is, you know, the bean. And well, yeah. But most of what we eat in the way of beans were not had in the old world prior to 1492. I guess there were lentils and maybe chickpeas. But you know, the stuff that we reckon, you know, whether it's lima beans or fava beans or brown beans or my beloved Mayakoba beans that are so hard for me to get, but God, I love them. Those are all new world foods. So
yeah.
And especially in northern climes, you have to have protein, and protein sources are going to be hard to come by absent meat.
Yeah, and I do think from watching all those episodes of Andrew Zimmern, bugs could come, you know, play a bigger role. I mean, he's had a few episodes. I remember one time he was in Africa. He went to this village, and these guys started like playing the drums on the ground, basically. And they knew where this ant hive was at underground. And if they kept kind of beating on the ground, then they'd start doing it in rhythm, making songs. The ants eventually would leave the hive and come out, and they'd sit there with like a bowl as they stepped out, and they'd fry them up and have some like pepper sauce and great stuff, low in fat, high in protein. And I'm thinking, you know, we've got all these bark beetles infesting our mountain woods. You know, some entrepreneurs could go out there. I don't know. I think it could.
That's a big cultural hurdle to leap, Preston.
It sure is.
And, you know, I'm the first one to say that I won't be the first guy across that hurdle.
Okay.
Because and I'm not that squeamish, but I've still, you know, it's one of those things that hangs out and hangs out on the hard drive that is my brain. I remember 10th grade biology, and long before we ever got to the frog, we dissected an earthworm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that was okay. Then we dissected a grasshopper, and you know, it was a big old grasshopper. You're not on the West Coast. You're not quite to dinner yet, and you should be done with it on the East Coast. So I'll go ahead and say this. So I dissected the grasshopper, and I cut it open, and it looked like the inside of a Reese's cup.
Huh.
And I couldn't eat a Reese's peanut butter cup for about a year. Just couldn't go there. So, you know, no, I understand, and, you know, I understand the necessities, and I understand the preferability for some people. You know, it was like that episode watching Tony Bourdain eat the raw seal eyeball.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, that was a treat, and he was among Inuit people who you know, treated him as an honored guest. And you don't say no, I don't want the. I tell you what do you say? I'm not an honored guest tonight, and don't get the eyeball. You don't do that.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of animals that had been, you know, really assaulted for a long time but are kind of making a comeback, you know, bison, buffalo, that's yeah, coming back more. And apparently I learned recently from this herbalist that alfalfa is an Arabic term meaning the father of all foods.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. We have this incredible herbalist, midwife, Wiccan lady here. She lives in Boulder, actually. And a friend of mine videotaped her in her lawn, and she created what she calls a wild lawn. And she lets her weeds grow because she knows what they are and how they can be utilized in teas and on salads and for skin ailments and for a whole number of things. And anyway, my friend who's this videographer taped her going through her yard and, you know, picking, say, a elderberry, a dandelion, talking about the root of it,
mm-hmm,
the history of it, burdock root. She talked about that a lot. Anyway, just a fascinating presentation. And I'll be sure to send you a copy, actually.
Oh, I'd love to see it.
Yeah, I think you'd enjoy it. But again, it's such a threatening thing also, this knowledge, because there's that war being waged. And I completely understand. I'm sure you have listeners in your audience who have, you know, conventional lawns and probably get a lot of enjoyment out of them. And, you know, it's a hobby. It's a fun hobby for a lot of people. But still, to just kind of expand the notion of what our lawn and outdoor space around our houses, our offices, what they can be, and how they can be utilized. And she's like, right now with these lawns, we're using like 20% of our water in the summertime to water these non-native grasses, and then we're using another huge part of our landfill space, like 20% again, to mow the lawns, wrap them in plastic bags, and throw them in the dump.
Now, see, that part makes me crazy.
Yeah, yeah. And then
because you take the clippings, you put them in a pile, and you compost them, and then they're wonderful for your garden.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And, you know, there's the noise. I mean, I lived in, like, a suburban area of Omaha, Nebraska for a while, which was kind of like a lawn-keeping capital of the world at the time. Lots of stiff competition, and we did a pretty good job with it, definitely.
Is that a dandelion? Die, dandelion, die!
Yeah, what will the neighbors think? You know, it's always that kind of cult pressure in the community, too. And if you've got, you know, weeds, then they're going to blow over to your neighbor's lawn, and then there's going to be hell to pay. And all these, some people had, like,
lawns
that were...
Is this your crabgrass?
Right, right. And but some neighbors.
Oh, leave it. Yeah, leave it. Leave it up to Monsanto. They'll come up with a crabgrass with genetic markers on it, so you can find out whose neighbor gave it to you.
There you go. Totally. You know, they're kind of doing that in a sense with you know, the ways they're having people track, you know, see cross pollination of their Roundup Ready seeds, and you know, make sure your neighbor has the license to do that, and if not, turn them in, and we'll give you a fine or a fee or whatever. I mean, turning farmers against each other like that, again, how you structure an economy has such a huge effect on just our inhuman relations. And anyway, yeah, some people, though, they're well, like Rocky Anderson dug up his conventional lawn and started to plant some and did some civil disobedience because it was against the laws of Salt Lake City, but, you know, he planted his vegetable garden. And there are other people. There's this entire Los Angeles guerrilla gardening group that goes out to some of the kind of harder, dingier spots of, you know, public space and try to beautify it. They might plant vegetable garden, or they might plant flowers or native grasses. Stuff like that. I actually found this company called Botanical Papers where they do greeting cards and wedding invitations and stuff like that. And the paper is all this 100% recycled. And within the paper are these seeds for like either wildflowers or basil or whatever. So if you throw away the card or you want to, or you can just plant it out in your backyard and it'll grow up these flowers. I thought that was a nice.
Oh, that's nice.
All kinds of ingenious stuff going on like that. Again, the solutions that are just limitless stuff we couldn't even imagine. It's just it's going on. Oh, what was I missed the first part of the show. What was that vote that Sandra was talking about for your show?
Yeah. If you look over at my late the easiest way, if you go to headonradionetwork.com. And there's a blog post titled Send Bob to Netroots Nation.
Oh, okay.
Or if you look at your Facebook, my last status update also contains the same link. It takes you to a Democracy for America page. And at that page, you can vote favorably for me for a scholarship that will send me to Netroots Nation in August in Pittsburgh.
Okay, yeah, I'll get on that. I can do that, definitely.
And, you know, if you feel like it, spread it around on your Facebook.
Okay.
Right now, let me just check here real quick. Take a quick peep here. Yeah, right now there are 19 votes, we need a bunch more.
Okay. I'll add at least one for sure.
Okay, great.
Okay.
All right. Well, Preston, I'm going to roll along with a wonderful conversation this evening. Have a great weekend, and we will talk soon.
Sounds good, man.
All right. See you.
Bye
now. Bye. From Denver, follower of all things hopeful, all things green, all things that present a positive reality. That's our buddy Preston. I did just check. Yeah, 19 responses there. Could use a whole bunch more. Bunches and bunches. And, again, you got to register with Democracy for America, but it happens pretty quick, and I don't think they'll be particularly abusive. By the way, this for News Ninja Susan. Juanita says she's trying to find that form on Medicare, and thank you. She said, after an hour of getting nowhere this morning, I stopped doing anything. I was thinking about going to my senator or local representative, but I definitely will do the Medicare thing. So, you know, look how a little activism works here. Isn't that cool? Our buddy Dave in Canada sends the following. It's a dialogue with regard to what Preston was saying about lawns. It's called God Learns About Lawns. God says, Frank, you know all about gardens and nature. What in the world's going on down there on the planet? What happened to the dandelions, violets, thistle, and stuff I started eons ago? I had a perfect no-maintenance garden plan. Those plants grow in any kind of soil, withstand drought, and multiply with abandon. The nectar from the long-lasting blossoms attracts butterflies and honeybees and flocks of songbirds. I expected to see a vast garden of colors by now, but all I see are these green rectangles. St. Francis. That's the tribes that settled there, Lord, the suburbanites. They started calling your flowers weeds and went to great lengths to kill them and replace them with grass. God. Grass? But it's so boring. It's not colorful. It doesn't attract butterflies and birds and bees and only grubs and sodworms. It's sensitive to temperatures. Do these suburbanites really want all that grass growing there? St. Francis. Apparently so, Lord. They go to great pains to grow it and keep it green. They begin each spring by fertilizing grass and poisoning any other plant that crops up in the lawn. God. Spring rains and warm weather probably make grass grow really fast. That must make the suburbanites happy. St. Francis. Apparently not, Lord. As soon as it grows a little, they cut it, sometimes twice a week. God. They cut it? Well, do they then bale it up like hay? St. Francis. Not exactly, Lord. Most of them rake it up and put it in bags. God. They bag it? Why? Is it a cash crop? Do they sell it? St. Francis. No, sir. Just the opposite. They pay to throw it away. God. Now, let me get this straight. They fertilize grass so it'll grow, and when it does grow, they cut it off and pay to throw it away? St. Francis. Yes, sir. God. These suburbanites must be relieved in the summer when we cut back on the rain and turn up the heat. That surely slows the growth and saves them a lot of work. St. Francis. You're not going to believe this, Lord. When the grass stops growing so fast, they drag out hoses and pay more money to water it so they can continue to mow it and pay to get rid of it. God. What nonsense. At least they kept some of the trees. That was a sheer stroke of genius, if I do say so myself. The trees grow leaves in the spring to provide beauty and shade in the summer. In the autumn, they fall to the ground and form a natural blanket to keep moisture in the soil and protect the trees and bushes. Plus, as they rot, the leaves form compost to enhance the soil. It's a natural circle of life. St. Francis. You better sit down, Lord. The suburbanites have drawn a new circle. As soon as the leaves fall, they rake them into great piles and pay to have them hauled away. God, no. No. What do they do to protect the shrub and tree roots in the winter and keep the soil moist and loose? St. Francis. After throwing away the leaves, they go out and buy something which they call mulch. They haul it home and spread it around in place of the leaves. God. And where do they get this mulch? Oh, God, it's going to be one of those days. They cut down trees and grind them up to make the mulch. God. Enough. I don't want to think about this anymore. St. Catherine, you're in charge of the arts. What do you got scheduled for us tonight? St. Catherine. Dumb and Dumber, Lord. It's a real stupid movie about God. Never mind. I think I just heard the whole story from St. Francis. Yeah, and it does, you know, it does get under it. It gets into your system. I'm sitting here fretting about the fact that we've got to change, we've got to do some maintenance on the mower. Don't look like I'm going to have a tiller to do a garden this year, so we got to keep that down a little bit, I guess. And there are rational reasons for keeping the high grass back from the house itself. You know, you got to keep a little, that was wonderful, Dave. You got to keep a little buffer zone to keep the creepy crawlies out. So, you know, sure, keeping it cut back from the house, that makes sense. But, yeah, I've never been one of those people who understood the whole... But then again, I... Oh, boy. This is going to be one of those Bob the Troglodyte moments. I don't see the sense in planting something that doesn't give food. Tulips are beautiful. Irises are gorgeous. Azaleas, rhododendrons, all those ornamental plants. And I guess it just goes to show how self-centered I am. I like growing things that make food. So, you know, sorry, but I'm that way. Then again, you know, as far as theater is concerned, I don't like the show pieces that where people speaking to other people break into song. And it's just me. I'm a troglodyte that way. I like my liquor and my theater without ornamentation. Well, yeah, sure. The flowers are okay if they feed the birds and bees. Yes, absolutely. We were driving down the road the other day, Agnes and I, and noticed that the state road people had been out in the median grinding up the median. And I said, what in the world are they doing? She said, planting wildflowers. My first impression was, how nice. But if you just leave them alone, won't the wildflowers grow? No, because not the kind of wildflowers we want. So there's that. Yeah, do please jump out and get some votes in for this Netroots Nation scholarship. Just keeping an eye on. You know, you guys have done a great job through the course of the show, and it'll probably grow some more after this thing turns into a podcast as well. Tell your friends and neighbors. Send Bob to Netroots Nation so Vista can screw up again and make him really crazy. But it's there at headonradionetwork.com, and it's also a status update from my Facebook page and Twitter. So there's, you know, there's some different ways of going about it, but I sure do need your help. Now, this isn't the closing of all voting, but the first round of voting closes on the 10th, and it would be nice to have a boatload of votes to go into that process with and be mighty helpful. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, it's 304-658-3333. Email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And I think, you're welcome to get in touch any way you want to. A little reminder, you can always go to the chat room, headonradionetwork.com. Click on chat room, registration's easy and free. And there's a great little community of folks in there having a rollicking good time every day during the shows. So avail yourself any way you want to. Oh, let's see. What do we got? Where else do we have to go this evening? Let's see. We did Kiefer Sutherland. Yeah, okay. We did Nancy Pelosi. Well, kind of did Nancy Pelosi. And, let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
Doing good.
This is Marty.
Oh, Marty, good to hear from you.
Yeah, good to hear from you, too. Yeah, it's after work. Nobody else is here, so I feel more comfortable in calling.
Yeah, oh, so you're not under the desk hiding?
Something like that, yeah. So I do have to use a toll-free number, otherwise it's on the university's nickel and...
No sweat. That's what it's there for.
So, anyway, yeah, I was, you know, talking about all the distractions and everything, Manny Ramirez, the whole thing, going back to Barry Bonds and all. I don't know. To me, it's just, you know, if I get back into that a bit, it's like, to me, it's all a matter of the hypocrisy of our society now, which is about, you know, our athletes, they must be pure of mind, body, and whatever.
Yeah, good thing nobody told Babe Ruth that.
But in the meantime, you'll have these idiots on ESPN talking about the whole thing and are making fun of Manny and all that, and they'll have and go to a commercial for Viagra or Cialis or Focus Factor or something.
Yeah, or Bob's a very happy man. Yeah,
Bob's a very happy man, that's right. And, you know, and I was commenting on the message board, Alvin Toffler must be shaking his head. Because if you remember Future Shock,
yes,
he postulated a society where you would need these chemicals. You wake up in the morning and you take something like Focus Factor in order to get your brain in the gear, and you take something else and to get your body. And I don't think he quite predicted Viagra, though, if I remember correctly.
No, I don't think he did either. But he did have the general idea down pat.
Yes, he did.
And you know, is Marty? Is our life so? Is this stuff really? Is this necessary to, on an existential basis, to get through the modern existence, or is it just the consumerizing of our body chemistry?
Are you talking? Oh, I thought you were talking about the societal need for constant sensationalistic stimulation.
It's tied together.
I guess that includes. I guess this is Viagra too. You know, you wonder because two of Tom Hartman's partners yesterday morning were talking to Jeff Smith. You can seedsofdeception.com, and they were talking about a documentary he was part of called The World According to Monsanto, and going into GMOs and all the stuff that goes into the food and all. And you keep wondering, it's like, well, is this increase of need to create drugs for those who have trouble, shall we say, rising to the occasion?
Ba-dum-bum.
Thank you. I'm here all night, fry the veal. Is it because of what we're putting in the bloody food? You know, because, you know, it...
I think that's a rational question.
You know, because...
A sort of human biochemical version of the, we have to have snakes to get rid of the rats, now we have to have mongooses to get rid of the snakes, and now we need something to take care of the mongooses.
The mongoose, agreed. And, you know, what better way to depopulate a planet by making the sex drive needed for procreation, or let me change that word to the instinctive drive for procreation, to reduce that to where you need chemicals to help, and then you have to go out and buy the chemicals.
And see, that's so ridiculous in the first place, Marty, because if you look at human evolution, you know, baboons' butts turn blue when they're ready for sex.
This is true.
You know, we've all seen what happens when a female dog goes into estrus. All the male dogs know. They don't need any, you know, there need not be a prom.
Yep.
The human evolutionary response to that, to make sure of the continuation of the species, is the fact that sex is fun.
But the only problem is, though, we've got a religious and, you know, the religious industrial complex now with Bristol Palin at its forefront, which is laughable in itself, saying, don't do it, suppress the urge.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. And along comes the religion industry and says, no, it's not fun. It's not supposed to be fun. You're only supposed to do this to make more little members of the religion. Don't enjoy it.
Wrong browser yet again. I keep forgetting I can't use Safari to enter the chat room.
Oh.
No, it's a beta, so there are things wrong with it, so I have to use Firefox.
Oh, okay.
So now that I've done that, what was
it? No, just that, you know, the idea that, you know, if you can enjoy it, there's always a religion industry there to tell you that it's wrong. You know, and in other words, so what I'm asserting is that the religion industry, along the lines of what we were talking about Wednesday before everything went sideways yesterday, The religion industry exists in large part to run counter to the very most basic tenets of human nature. You know, to enjoy ourselves, to impose guilt on us for what we might enjoy, so human beings evolve, they do so developing the enjoyment of the sexual procreative act, and we develop a human institution to make sure that nobody enjoys the sexual procreative act. And once we're sure that nobody's enjoying the sexual procreative act, because that runs counter to being able to procreate at all, we have to come up with chemicals that make it possible to do the procreative act. I mean, if you think about the earliest world religions, I think about the cult of, Ishtar in Babylon. The temple was the prostitution precinct. And every woman was expected to go and do a little bit of temple prostitution once in her life, you know, just to serve the god.
I sure appreciate the wealth of your knowledge, because there are a lot of things back in the mythology that I know, but your knowledge of it just blows what I know away. It is just so impressive, and I'm using the wrong password. It's interesting to see. I mean, you were talking about the technology, the windmill technology that sprang up from ancient Persia. And I kept thinking, it's like, yeah, well, those Persians, if you remember, I mean, now we'd call them Arabs, even though I do believe they're...
No, they are separate and distinct peoples.
There'd be more, we're idiots, we don't know. I mean, I remember...
The Persians, Marty, are actually, and this is not used within the Hitlerian use of the word... The Persians are Aryans. The Persians are the same crowd of people from the Caucasus who migrated southward. Some went down into the Indian subcontinent, and some turned a little bit right and wound up being the Persians and the Medes.
Granted.
And but no, please go ahead.
But you've got along with the suppression of that male drive. That now relies on chemicals to particularly the elite men to perform. It's almost like the only thing they get off on right now is just making a whole bunch of money and putting it figuratively to all the rest of us. You have to suppress anything that might threaten their control. I mean, how much did we, the whole funny thing about, that's the whole funny thing about the church, particularly the Catholic Church and the Vatican. It's, how much further would we have come? How much quicker we might have come had what Da Vinci had designed not been suppressed by the church for so long.
Yes, I do. I do. But that's their job.
Of course, one could argue, man, with all the advancement, mankind is still 1.0.
Yeah, we're definitely not out of the beta yet.
yeah, it's like heaven forbid Bill Gates goes up and. Or Steve Ballmer goes up and starts advising God. Or to be fair, Steve Jobs for that matter. There's a lot of distraction going on around me. It's Whole Earth Festival weekend here.
Very cool.
On the University of California Davis campus. Lots and lots of solar panels up, number of solar cookers up as well.
Oh, neat! One of these days, I got to get one of the solar cookers. Now, is this the cardboard box version?
Huh?
Is that the cardboard box version? The solar.
Some of them are cardboard boxes. Some of them are. Some of them are metal, and they have, and they just, they're built like radio antennas, basically.
Yeah, parabolic, and they focus
and
the
they
sun.
Focused onto the one point in the middle. Yep. That's them. I mean, I've seen them at when I was an undergraduate. but it.
But those, you know, those are magnificent things because they cut down on deforestation and make continued existence much more viable in places that are already deforested.
Yeah, and that's true. They could definitely use a lot of them down in the rainforest where they're trying to cut them down in order to grow food, or some idiots go in there for other reasons.
Yeah, or come up with, yeah, we need more mahogany.
Yeah, or go in Africa. We need more ivory and go up and kill a bunch of elephants for their tusks.
You know, you mentioned the church a minute ago. Did you catch Benny's pronouncements on social networking sites?
I try to avoid what the Hitler Youth Pope pronounces. What did he do? Thrill me.
he says that it was just a brief little statement about social networking, but he says that it's possible. He's concerned that people will be overusing it instead of interacting personally. And you know, for a guy who's got a humongous scandal that stems from a little too personal interaction. To step in and say that Facebook is the problem. But see, that's the problem with this guy. For a guy who doesn't countenance divorce, the irony is entirely too rich. He is divorced from reality.
Yes.
I mean, no, he hasn't had it annulled. He's absolutely divorced.
Well, the other thing about it is he's got a very bizarre point. But the only problem is we separate ourselves, go into our places and, you know, closed, locked the door, and turn on the television, which I have to admit I'm guilty of because about 3 weeks ago someone broke into my place and stole a bunch of stuff.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't pleasant, but, you know, it puts the fear. It gives you that shot of fear that it's like, this is mine, damn it, and I'm going to stay here and lock it up and protect it and everything.
Oh, there's a whole sense of personal violation that goes along with that.
And that's true too. But you know, I won't say I'm not afraid because you know, fools are unafraid.
Right.
But the greater fool allows fear to rule him, which I will not do.
I get it.
I was asking if somebody can do something in Canada. Oh, that's Canada, UK. Oh,
yeah.
That's
That's Dave. Our buddy Dave.
Yeah. Hi, Dave. I wonder if he's going to call in.
I think you just made sure he will.
Oh.
But he was, he was responsible for the dialogue between St. Francis and God there a couple of minutes ago.
You know who I miss? I miss Andrew from Wales.
Yeah, Andy. The last I heard from Andy, he was having such devilish internet connection problems.
Hmm.
And haven't heard from him in a long time. Haven't heard from our other Andrew in upstate New York either. It's been a while for him. I guess we're calling him out, aren't we?
Yeah, but a lot of bass going on. The walls are rattling. If you've seen and remember Ruthless People, the scene where Judge Reinhold's trying to sell a huge speaker and talking about, you know, this huge speaker that's as big as a car and costs
yes.
so much, and when you die, you can be buried in it.
One of those.
I'm almost ashamed to be able to remember that nearly verbatim. The Ruthless People is a funny movie.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, Idiocracy is seared into my brain, so. I've gotten to the point where I am functionally unable to explain Idiocracy to anybody anymore. I just sit there like the doctor, you know, I mean, it's like, screw. And because I can't. I just can't. It's become so much a part of the fabric of my existence that, you know, it's like trying to tell a Martian about an elephant.
But they had a more serious reason for calling, but now I can't remember what it was. It was something Sandra had said. Because she was...
You were not calling in to diss the Raiders, I'm sure.
Not unless you want to hear my story about that, about my going to the Raider game wearing my Broncos stuff. Though I was wise enough to carry a Townsley Sharks jacket along with me to make sure I didn't die before the game.
Looking for a loophole.
The thing about Boxer and Feinstein, of course, Boxer is from San Francisco. Feinstein made her name stepping in as the mayor of San Francisco after George Moscone and Harvey Milk were murdered. And never mind that she's got a huge conflict of interest with her husband, Richard Bloom, not only being a UC regent, but also, I forget the company he's part of.
Oh, yeah, I can't remember the name of the company either, but it has profited massively from the Iraq and Afghanistan wars.
Exactly, and she keeps voting. But you keep hearing about this ultra-liberal thing about San Francisco, and maybe it's just because, you know, they're more tolerant of gay people in San Francisco than anybody else, but I am sorry. San Francisco, like Davis here, I mean, they refer to Davis around Davis as the People's Republic of Davis, like it's supposed to be as liberal, as radical as Berkeley was in the 1960s. But it really isn't. You know, they have a lot of progressive ideas and had a mayor that did a lot of questionable things, like wanting to put frog trails underneath I-80 so they didn't try to hop across the freeway and get squashed by cars going 80 or 7 miles an hour. But it really, really isn't, because you've also got a lot of the administrators of this place here who make a very great deal of money. I'm sorry, they're not.
And they, of course, are like army ants.
Yes. And, you know, we got the whole region leading us over the cliff. I mean, we've got one chancellor retiring. We just got the notice of the new chancellor having been appointed. And I keep wondering, it's like, okay, now how much more money did she get over the previous chancellor to come here? I'll leave you with this, then I'll get off on David. You know, we have a new president, Mark Udoff, who was the president of the University of Texas. And he's making like $800,000 a year plus perks over at the University of Texas. If the Texas Betsy will probably remember what he made over there better than I do.
Good work if you can get it.
The last UC system president made a little less than $500,000. And I kept wondering how the heck were they going to draw him from there in a no state income tax state over here with the sales tax and the income tax and everything. And it turned out that they raised it to about $1 million and all. They basically doubled the salary from the previous president to him, plus all the perks, cars, places, you know, residence and per diem and everything. And then, so my union, which is affiliated with CWA, you know what they're offering us? We're in contract negotiations over 3 years, 0, 0, and 0.
Kind of sticks in your craw a little bit, doesn't it?
Oh yes, it does. And now you got people, and now you got people saying, well, you must be willing to take a huge pay cut because the rest of the private industry is too. And my attitude is, we're already underpaid, and we seem to be clay targets whenever someone wants to claim. And let me remind you, University of California is separate from the state of California. I can't quite figure out that distinction because we get some grant funding from private industry. We get some grant funding from the university, from the federal government. We get some from the state. Well, I'm not certain where all the money for the administrators and the faculty comes from, but apparently the only way they can pay us increased money is to get increased money from the state budget.
Well, see, it's interesting you raise all this, Marty, because one of the things I've noticed, and this is from another school, I've got a document. I possess a document that attests to the fact that I had a cup of coffee in college, and the autograph on it is that of one E. Gordon Gee. He was president of West Virginia University once upon a time, And then he traveled around a bit. I think he may have gone down to Vanderbilt for a little while. But now he is the head man at Ohio State University. And we talk, you know, you talk about, you know, how the, you know, how you pay these people. Well, it turns out that E. Gordon Gee, whose university is actively engaged in a lot of green, sustainable, renewable research, he sits on the board of Massey Energy and draws a tidy sum for doing so.
Oh, man. Holy conflict of interest, that man.
Yeah, and I mean, it, you were saying, you know, saying earlier, I don't know how we're going to pay these guys. And, of course, my mind went immediately to, you know, what they need is a shoe contract. You know, because that's, you know, that's, and it goes all the way back to, you know, when I was a little boy watching Bear Bryant sitting there doing his football game recap show, and there was always a bag of Golden Flake potato chips and a bottle of Coca-Cola. And it's gone so much further now, you know, because, you know, well, you know, Coach, if you come here, we'll be make sure you get a real nice shoe contract with Nike.
Yep.
You know, and I guess this is the corporate equivalent of that. You know, E. Gordon Gee drawing a tasty check from people who are destroying my home.
Yep.
And then going home and saying, well, you know, we're proud of the green research we're doing here at The Ohio State University. And you have to say The Ohio State University, too, by the way.
The Ohio State University.
Right. And I'm not gooning on Ohio State. I'm gooning on E. Gordon Gee.
Understood. There's one other thing, and then I'll get off. You and Sandra, and I think we've all asked the question, you know, what's it going to take for us to finally say, that's it, we've had enough? And with all the outrages that have happened over the past, 30 years, basically, are both your and my adult lifetimes, we're close to the same age. And the only thing I can think of is this. I said it as a joke for the first time I thought of it, but it's turning out to be true. And that is, I mean, what would get us in the street protesting and demand and burning with the pitchforks and everything? Simple. Bring back prohibition and cancel the Super Bowl.
Don't forget reinstate the draft.
No, I don't think even the draft would do it because there'd still be ways for people to get out of it, or if they had to go into it, what they would do is the favored would still find a way to be in the rear with the gear or in another country where the bombs don't reach them. No, take away the single most watched program of the year to the Super Bowl. And say you can't get liquored up. I was rewatching Master and Commander a couple of days ago.
Love that movie.
I do too. And you know, now you know the scene I'm about to go to, which is the scene where the doctor is telling Russell Crowe to tip the men's grog over the side, and Crowe said, "No, I'd rather have them three sheets to the wind occasionally." Then have a revolt on his hands.
Exactly, and the British era of His Majesty's Navy of that era understood that concept very, very well.
Yes, they did.
And the last place in the world you want to riot is on a ship at sea. But the fact of the matter is, as a culture, I think you're right, Marty. We are that ship at sea too. I mean, if you think, you know, what is it? The minute that the participants in in any given year's Super Bowl are determined via the conference championships. The next story out is usually, and correct me if I'm wrong, the next story out is usually how much the ads are going to cost.
The cost, yeah. And I remember there was a whole consternation about not being able to get enough revenue from the ads to the game because of the down economy. They weren't going to be as elaborate. They weren't going to be as much. Who televised that thing? So they get for not going to visit my father for the game. Went to see Mardi Gras and went to Galveston to see. I gotta send you a picture to put up on the website of a street that I took a picture of a building on. There's a street, a car, and above the car on a building is the Ike line, showing how high the water got.
Oh my goodness.
At that part of Galveston. This is downtown Galveston near the Strand where the Mardi Gras parade went. So, anyway.
I didn't even know they did Mardi Gras in Galveston.
Yes, they do. It beats going to New Orleans because there aren't any people who are willing to go crawling on top. top of you, as my father said his one time at New Orleans, which is why he won't go to New Orleans for Mardi Gras anymore.
Well, see, my sister and brother-in-law live in Mobile, and they say the same thing. Mardi Gras in Mobile, A, it's the first Mardi Gras in the New World, and B, it's at least considerably saner and still a heck of a lot of fun.
Yeah. That's the thing. I want to go someplace even more insane and go like to Rio for Carnival.
Well, you know, and that's on one of, yeah. In fact, Jimmy Buffett did a song about that.
Anyway, I think I'm holding up David and maybe a couple of us. I'm going to let you go.
Okay. Well, Marty, good to hear from you, brother.
Good to hear from you. Good to talk to you, too, Bob. It's always fun, and I'll be emailing and occasionally dropping in the chat room like I am now.
Okay, great. Right. Well, I appreciate it, and have a great weekend.
You, too.
All right. Bye now. Well, it's about, we're coming close to the end of our Friday evening, but we got at least one conversation left. Hey, welcome to the program.
Would that be me?
That would be you.
Hello there.
What's up, Dave?
I thought you might like the lawn thing.
Yeah, that was cute. That was
it.
And it's so very true.
It is. And one of the things that I find when I...
But who do we have to blame for this? Now, to be honest, do we hang this one on the English or the French? Because it's not like the French didn't have manicured lawns either.
We hang this on whoever said in the Bible that man had dominion over nature.
Well, yeah, that was the convenient excuse. But, you know,
it all turned to rat poop, really.
Yeah, in the course of the conversation, I was thinking and seeing our buddy Robert in the chat room as well from Akita Kyushu. Just look at the wild difference between the Japanese concept of garden and the European concept of one. In the one,
the European concept was you can do whatever the hell you want. You can bring plants in from China. They're going to completely screw up your ecosystem, but that's not a big deal. You have every right to have a garden.
The European idea that we are going to mold nature into the shape that we want.
Yeah.
As compared to the Asian
arrogance,
massive arrogance, and again it comes back, I think, to that dominionism idea.
Yeah, it is. Man was given dominion over nature by whoever wrote those books that don't stand up the standards of evidence required in court of law. You know, we went there.
Yeah, you got, and you know what? Boss Man Wayne was listening last week, and we were talking. He said, "Yeah, what was it that Dave from Canada said?" He said, "You got to make him, next time you talk to him, you got to make him say it again because I want to memorize it." You know, about the Bible not holding up to the evidence.
To the standards of evidence required when you put your hand on that damn book in a court of law.
That's
it. So in a court of law, you have to put your hand on a book and swear on this book that the evidence you will give will be, you know, the whole truth, nothing but the truth. What's in that book wouldn't stand up to the standard that you're required to give evidence at.
And yet it is used as a reason to destroy the planet.
There. We'll just, you know, just put a small coat of logic on that, and your mind melts. That's what happens.
Yeah, latex flat logic.
You know? And this... This is one of the things, like, I have two teenage kids, and they're both very bright, and given they have to listen to me, can you imagine that, being a teenager?
Do you get the eye roll, Dave? You know what I mean by the eye roll?
I get the eye roll sometimes, but you know what? Most of the time, I don't. My daughter's rabidly environmental, like, terrible. And she's very, very strong in herself. She won't back off from anybody. That includes me, which causes problems occasionally, you know. But she's very strong in her beliefs, and she's very strong in herself, which, yeah, I think is great. And my son's very much the same. And we have some really good over-dinner discussions. One of the things I really enjoy right now is having dinner together. And we sit down at the table, and we talk about stuff, important stuff.
Indeed.
That's what I did with my parents. And my dad was rabidly anti-corporate back in, 1969. So So I guess that's where I get it from. But, you know, just I'm just listening to everything. I find myself having to write things down. Otherwise, I forget, you know, like talking about environmental stuff. And diamonds was a something that about 3 years ago, I decided I'd put my money where my mouth was and I'd go out and I'd work for the Green Party. That was a really disillusioning process.
Really?
Yeah, oh yeah. Terrible. It seemed like everyone I was running into were trying to do the green thing because they thought it was cool. And there was one woman in particular who drove a Lexus SUV.
Ouch.
To a meeting of the Green Party thing. And we were sitting down there.
Is that the living manifestation of that line from the Don Henley song about, I saw a deadhead sticker on a Cadillac?
Yes, exactly. That's it. And we were sitting there, and sometimes my mouth runs away with me. And we got on talking about stuff, and I just said, look, you know, you have to start with yourself. And I pointed to her rock. It was this monster. It was a knuckle duster rock. And I said, for example, a good example is, you know, for one carat of high quality diamond, you make a hole 40 tons of rock large. And digging that 40 tons up, you make a pile of rock next to it 40 tons large. So that you can have this nice little sparkly thing on your finger. In some parts of the world, children die to mine diamonds. Is that sparkly enough for you?
Oh, she had to just love you.
Oh, she put her hand over that, and at the next meet that I went to, it wasn't on her finger. But I don't think she ever spoke to me again.
Doesn't sound like you're grieving real hard.
No, I'm not. But that's the way I do stuff. When I see stuff like that, I sometimes can't help myself, you know?
I do.
And I really don't regret the enemies that makes me.
Well, see, I do some of that here at the homestead too, Dave, because, and you know, Ferg's sitting here next to me. I'll look at him and his sisters when there's a light left on in a bedroom and I say, you know, we oppose mountaintop removal. When you walk out of the room and you leave the damn light on, you're making their jobs easier and ours harder. Why make it harder on ourselves?
My kids, when they leave lights on in a room, I say, are any eyeballs benefiting from those photons in there? And that usually gets the message.
Oh, that's like that great old Scottish joke about the old Scotsman and his son. His son had been to the doctor. His dad laid out money for him to have a new pair of glasses. Kid's walking around with his new glasses on. What are you reading, son? Nothing, pa. What are you looking at? Nothing. Then take your glasses off. You're wasting them.
Exactly. Yeah. But that's, you know, I mean, again, my two are pretty good about environmental things.
Well, and these guys are getting the clue,
I'm
too.
I'm fairly rabid, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not very subtle sometimes, but, you know, sometimes subtlety is not a good plan.
Well, sometimes, you know, sometimes it really does. Sometimes it takes a hammer. Sometimes it takes a pair of tweezers. And the wisdom is knowing which takes which. Hey, Dave, I've got to roll along, but have a great weekend, and we'll try to get to you earlier next time, and we'll extend this a bit.
Well, I'll have to get in earlier too.
All right.
Life gets in the way sometimes. Have a good one.
All right.
Help yourself. Keep doing it.
All right. Thanks. Bye now.
Good night. Bye.
From Canada, our Canadian correspondent, our buddy Dave. About a minute and a half left in the show this evening. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. Another reminder, please check out the link either at my Facebook, my Twitter, or at headonradionetwork.com. Send Bob to Netroots Nation. Or you can just go to Democracy for America. That's democracyforamerica.com/Netroots_Nation_scholarships. And then just start looking for Bob Kincaid. Need some votes here. Sure would be fun to go to Netroots Nation, and we've got done a lot of done some good during the program. It would be cool to have a bunch of them by May the 10th on the close of the first round of voting. So thanks, everybody. Thanks for stepping up, those of you who are able to and who have done so, and taken bold steps toward keeping the horn on the air for another month. Our appreciation is sincere and deep. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional, to John Fox, our chief engineer, host of All Foxed Up, our chief musician, our the webmaster, web designer. What isn't John Fox? Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk, WhiteRoseSociety.org. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Ben never sends a bill and relies on your goodwill. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ColeRiverWind.org. They know what it takes to make a difference, and they're doing what it takes to make a difference. Thanks to Horn intern Junior Grade Ferg for hanging out, even if he wasn't answering phones so much. He's enjoying the heck out of being in the chat room, but these things happen. Love you too, son. Welcome to Costco. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.